sadly, none of it. I would have preferred, but yeah, the auto-tuned singing, the vocal stylings of Jason David Frank would be preferable to that.
Well, you know, if they did that Zio episode today, it would have been auto-tuned. You can't tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
We will, but you'll just tell us otherwise.
Exactly.
Because XV is dicks.
XV is dicks.
3, 2, 1. And now it's time for another Superhero Time. With your hosts, XV.
I've lost my screw.
Hey, Mickey.
Bigger and better dicks. Shit, that's my intro part.
Paladin.
Roger Rabbit.
Ken.
LOL.
And Fort Max.
As always, kill Hitler.
It's Morgan time!
It's superhero time, and we're hemorrhaging cast members by the week. I'm XV, and with me this week is just Ken.
Yo.
Paladin.
Hello.
And Fort Max.
Hello.
Because for once, even JD had something better to do. But not any of these guys. I can always count on you to have nothing better to do on a Monday night.
Well, it isn't just a Monday.
Hooray.
Yeah. Of course, we did have something quite a bit better to do on Saturday night.
Oh, yes.
Because Cartoon Network proved just how big of dicks they could be, even bigger than XV is dicks.
Yes.
By bringing back Toonami for one night as an April Fool's joke.
It's both awesome and sad at the same time.
You know, I've said this before, but I miss the days where Cartoon Network aired genuine quality anime because it was their job, not because it was a prank.
I miss the days when there was genuine quality anime for Cartoon Network to air.
There's still occasionally like one or two things a year, just they don't air it. They just sit on the same stuff over and over and over
again. The last anime I would call quality is Tiger and Bunny, and that's long over with.
Yeah, Persona 4 was pretty good.
Whatever. But no, as April Fool's jokes go, that was one of the more enjoyable while it was going on.
Kind of.
Especially with the new bumpers.
Maybe if you have cable.
You don't have cable?
No.
Wow.
It was also being streamed by some people.
It's being streamed by like several people. Because I kept seeing links pop up on Twitter. I think that there's so like at least 3 or 4 different streams.
I have to say, though, it was a great nostalgia trip to watch Gundam Wing being broadcast live like that.
It was. Even for DBZ.
And it was a good episode of Gundam Wing to choose for this, too.
Was it the edited Gundam Wing?
No, it was
the Midnight Run Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And I like how they like just chose the one that had like one of the most iconic images from the end of the episode of him detonating Wing Gundam.
Which they played all the time.
Midnight Run originally was Saturday nights, wasn't it?
No, it was midnights on weekdays. They would air the
Wasn't it originally Saturdays?
I don't think it was on Saturdays.
It wasn't.
No, not until later.
The original run of Gundam Wing was weeknights.
Yeah, they would air the edited episodes at like 5 in the afternoon.
No, I mean Midnight Run. Didn't Midnight Run initially just start out as a longer block on Saturday nights?
No, you're thinking of Adult Swim.
No.
No, this was before.
No, Toonami didn't go to Saturday nights until, well, they killed it.
No, I mean late Saturday, as in late night, early morning.
Fort Max, I'm just going to give you a blanket no, because we need to move on from this.
Okay.
No,
I only wanted to bring this up briefly because it was just a cool thing that happened after Ken and I got finished recording a later segment for today's show.
I'm glad it was like directly after, too.
Yeah, I mean, that worked out pretty well. So anyway, also that happened in the last week was Tamashii Nations?
Yeah, just go ahead and call it that. Doesn't matter.
Tamashii Whatever. Volume 3.
It was Tamashii Whatever. It doesn't really matter what it specifically was.
They only have
like, Tamashii turned.
You're not getting this.
Well, that's how you read it in English, yes. And they revealed a ton of new stuff.
Yes.
That may or may not come out in the future.
All of it has roughly a 40% chance of actually seeing release at this point.
Including the stuff with release dates?
Yes.
Okay.
Still waiting on Digimon.
Same here.
Do what now?
Gallantmon from Digimon Tamers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's never going to happen.
Or Master Asia.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's sitting in a quiet room with Master Asia.
And Rain and Allenby.
And they're all just kind of despairing around Funpsyche's coffee table mode.
They're having coffee with the Imogen.
Yeah. With the Imogen in their furry suits. Maybe it's better some of the stuff didn't come out. Or at least not come out yet.
Well, in the meantime, some of the stuff is nice to look at. For
yeah, so
starters,
let's have a rundown.
We have the Decarangers in regular form and SWAT mode, which is new.
So basically retail and Thomas U. Webb exclusive form.
No, they'll all be half and half.
Probably, because the girls...
I imagine at least Red will come out at retail in both versions.
Probably.
And sadly, the Decarangers are still missing their most important member.
Decamaster.
What, not Break?
Break.
Ball of Light.
Well, he wasn't the Ball of Light in Japan.
No, he was a crossdresser.
So which is better?
With Decaranger, weren't they all...
Well, him especially.
If only Mickey were here right now. I'm sure he has an insightful comment for us. Another important thing that the Decarangers are still missing is proper upper arm swivels.
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed about that, though, if they had put them in, that would have cut into where the badge is on their arm.
Okay, so put the upper arm swivel a little lower on the arm.
Oh, I know, but they seem to be kind of going uniform on those if you look at the other team that was revealed, where the Bokingers have them in the exact same place that the Gokaigers do.
Yeah, but there's nothing stopping them from putting a swivel lower in the arm.
Well, no, besides Bandai being lazy.
I mean, you could even design it into the elbow joint.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
In fact, I have figures that do that, made by Bandai.
Oh, yeah, but the issue here is Bandai being lazy.
Well, yeah. Well, okay, the Bokingers weren't the only new team teased.
Although they're the only full new team teased.
Although, actually, looking at the better pictures of the Decarangers, it looks a bit less like the Shinkingers exactly, because it doesn't have like those tubes sticking out of their shoulders. It looks more like Rider 1 and 2, actually.
And how does that work?
It works. It is a bit. It can be a bit limiting, but it gets the job done enough. It doesn't look quite as ugly as it does in the Shinkingers, though.
Well, see, I thought the advantage of the Shinkingers was that it looked better than if it had the cuts in the arms. And for that, you trade off some of the posability.
Yeah, but this actually does look a bit more clean than the Shinkingers. Although, I might be wrong looking a bit closer. No, I think the tubes are still there. Never mind.
I'm sure they are, because otherwise there'd be gaps in the shoulders.
And they're still just display prototypes right now, so a lot could change between now and possible eventual release.
I don't know. I think if they're showing off SWAT versions, they've got at least the base figures to their final stage.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of the Bokingers, too.
Yeah, the Bokingers do look like they probably need a bit of polish. Cause something does just not look quite right on some of them.
Yeah, I got that sense, too, but I couldn't quite place what.
Same for Aquaranger, who just doesn't look quite right.
Aquaranger didn't really bug me either way, because those costumes looked ridiculous to start with.
Yeah, but you know what does look fantastic is Walt's Gill.
Yes. Figuarts Walls Gill. All I can say is why.
We need that, and then a Super Robot Shogokin Great Walls.
Why is because you need something that can pronounce you Walls Guilty.
Yes.
But if they have to do a villain for Gokaiger, why not Bosco?
I imagine Bosco will happen. Because it's not like some other teams, like with the Shinkingers or the Decarangers, where they can roll out variants of the actual Rangers. So all the more reason for them to actually do the villains.
Plus, you know, I imagine Walls Gill was actually a little bit more popular than Bosco overall.
Or at least what they'd make a Monster Arts of.
Yeah.
Besides, yeah. The thing with Bosco is nobody wants Bosco's monster form. They would want, you know, the human face, which they're not going to ever do.
Either way, I think they will make a Bosco, and we'll probably see that sometime within the next by the
and
next
no one will want
show.
It.
I would want it.
Then it'll never come out.
No.
It's about as likely as Figure Arts Enter.
I would buy that.
But you can't.
And I never will.
Exactly. Okay, so there was one other team they're starting to work on now.
Well, technically two others, but that depends on how they go with this.
Yeah.
Because first, there's the Jetman showing Jet Hawk and Jet Condor, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was actually referring to. And is it just me, or does there not appear to be any kind of upper arm swivel at all on that mold right now?
I think it's kind of hidden by the shoulder armor jutting out.
Well, they do have the flying pose on display, so I guess they can move sort of to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, something just doesn't look right about how that arm's designed right now.
Again, that, show prototypes.
That's the one I'm
hoping.
Yeah,
those are probably really early
prototype.
But I like how they, instead of just like showing off, you know, Ryu, they knew they're like, yeah, we kind of have to show Guy too because that's who everybody wants.
Everybody likes dicks.
Exactly.
Okay,
and
so
also Figure Arts Ryu and Melee.
Accounting for the other team they might be starting on.
And they speaking of one
and Melee with the.
Okay, so we've lost Fort Max's audio for the moment. But as Ken was going to say, Ryu and Melee look a little rough, too.
Yeah, Ryu less so, but definitely Melee.
But Melee comes with Flit, which is awesome.
Yes.
I would like to think that Ryu and Melee's designs will be tightened up a little bit before they would actually get released.
Yeah.
Now, will these two be individually released or as a two-pack? What do we think?
Ooh, Paladin's audio is kind of dropping, too.
Oh, hell.
Well, we'll just work with it right now. but I don't know how likely a two-pack would be.
It would be nice, but they kind of have shied away from that lately. Release everything individually and get it, and bleed as much money out of the properties as possible.
Yeah. It's more normal just to expect them to do individual releases.
Plus, didn't a lot of the two-packs just not do well?
Well, the problem with the most recent, the problem with the more recent two packs was
they were O's.
Well, they were O's, and then there was the off double forms.
Well, those were a couple of years ago, though. Mind you, you could find them months later easily.
That's the point.
Yeah.
But the counterpoint to that is, would anyone buy one of these characters without the other?
Oh, sure. There's a lot of people who'd probably just buy Ryu.
Yeah. Fangirls.
Fanboys.
Yeah, this is true, too.
Everybody likes Ryu.
And I'm still guessing one or both of them will be Tamashii Web exclusive.
Yeah. If not both, I would assume Melee would be an exclusive.
I kind of expect that.
Of course.
I kind of expect they might be like Gosei Knight, where they make this mold that is not necessarily adherent to the rest of the team and release it before they even get to the rest of the team.
Did they release Gosei Knight already?
He is coming out, if not this month, then next month.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting about that.
And still no sign of the other Ghost Agers. Almost a year later.
Excellent. The self-awareness is very pleasing.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
And there was one more Super Sentai figure art on display. Baseball head.
Ah, baseball mask.
Well, I like my name better.
It is random, isn't it?
Now that I would buy just for the oddity of it.
Well, it's not every day you can buy something with a giant baseball for a head.
This is true.
Someone's antique telephone is ringing.
Again.
So anyway.
On to the figure arts for Kamen Rider.
There wasn't much of that, was there?
A lot of it we've seen.
And nearly all of it was foes, so yeah.
I think the only new things out of Forze were the Zodiarts and Powerdizer.
And there was one other thing, the spacesuit.
Well, that's never going to get released. It'll be up there with Futo-kun.
And unfortunately, the only interesting horoscope does not have a figure word yet.
Cancer?
Yes.
Well, he's dead now anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't care about... He's not dead, he's just in HFIL.
No, he's dead.
Come on, he could find the ladder back up to Snake Way.
He's dead until somebody gets the Dragon Balls and wishes him back.
Oh, and there's also Meteor's bike, but it doesn't really look that polished, and I wonder if it was just a display piece.
Probably.
Now, is Power Dizer an actual figure art or a figure art zero?
I think it's an actual figure art or something, because it doesn't... I don't know.
That's
what mode
frightening,
is it in?
To be honest.
It's in Shun football player mode. You know, that pose that the deluxe one can't actually do.
You know, like that one episode of Voyager.
Yes.
So how much is that going to cost, then?
A lot.
Oh, good God.
Assuming it actually gets released.
7,000 yen. Because I think it's got to be at least double the mass of any normal figure art.
It looks like it has die-cast, or at least released shiny silver paint.
Okay,
so why
9,800
yen. In Super Robot Shogokin?
Maybe it's Super Robot Shogokin. I don't know. I don't see... No, it's on the SH figure arts display, so...
Okay, if it was a Shogokin,
so
it'd be 100...
They didn't do anything as ridiculous as figure art vending machine.
Well, true.
Yeah, the figure arts.
I forget about that.
The figure arts power dizer should just be the tower mode.
Don't give them ideas.
Anyway, it seems the next rider from Kamen Rider Ryuki is Tiger. Kamen Rider X, if you prefer Dragon Knight. And they're also releasing Kamen Rider Zolda's Advent Beast.
Magna Giga, I think?
I have no f***ing clue how to pronounce that, so I'm not even going to try.
Now, did that have a Figma?
The contract monster? No.
I think the only contract monsters that showed up in Figma were... there was one, at least, right?
Probably Blackwing.
That would make the most sense, since it combines directly with Knight.
Right.
And the smallest.
if not the smallest, near to it, anyway. I remember having this conversation on Twitter once, but I don't remember what the conclusion was.
It probably concluded with you making fun of Aunt Chalice again.
Well, both things usually do.
Yeah, that's a very likely outcome.
It's like saying, the sky might be blue outside today.
It's like saying, well, FunPub f***ed up this week.
Did they?
Not yet, but it's still the beginning of the week.
The week is young. And BotCon is soon. That can only mean good things.
Are you looking forward to BotCon, Fort Max?
Yeah.
Well, that sure was a boring answer.
Was it?
Hey, I'm not the one paying.
You're not paying?
Ant is.
Oh, that's right. I remember you talking about that before. Well, in that case, shouldn't you be more excited to go?
I would... what's walk-in rates?
$20 per day.
Yeah.
No, that wouldn't... That's not worth that much excitement.
Damn.
Especially when I'm on the show.
Oh, well.
Fort Max is being boring on purpose.
You just now noticed that.
Oh, and speaking of boring, there were a couple new entries for SH Monster Arts.
That's not boring.
Yeah, it kind of is.
It's kind of routine by now.
Ultra Act has Gridman coming up.
Well, yeah, that's okay then.
Yeah, but that's not Monster Arts. Yeah, so Gridman appears to come with the Drago Cannon thing.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Although I still want to see, you know, as an accompaniment to that, Xenon as a action figure.
Xenon or Drago?
Well, Xenon's more likely since it's more, you know, normal human proportion-ish. I mean, they could do Drago just as well, but there'd be less point because of the, you know, dragon form limiting the move.
However, there's also the entire Optimus Prime design issue.
Eh, not really.
I'm sure nobody will notice. After all, Xenon doesn't have flames on him.
And he doesn't take people's faces.
I remember when I was a kid and I saw that. I bought it because I thought it looked like Optimus Prime.
I mean, there's any number of mecha that have similar-looking faces to that, because it's just a generic mecha face. There's even Gundams you could say look similar. I don't really think it's that big of an issue.
Yes, and speaking of Gundam, Robot Damashi is probably going to get a lot of my money now.
I haven't seen much of
the Leos.
Oh, they're putting out Leos?
Well,
yes.
They at least demonstrated that they have Leos.
And they'll be releasing the Good Wing Zero and Ultron.
Well, I dodged a bullet with Zaku's. I'm sure I can resist the Leos.
If they make the Taurus suit, I'll probably get that.
Yeah, if they make a transforming Taurus, I'm on board with that too.
Well, except transforming in Robot Damashi is transforming in Robot Damashi.
Well, yeah, but I mean that's true of any Gundam.
Yeah. Wing Zero looks like it transforms okay.
Does it?
Okay, think about how Wing Zero transforms.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, it's still better than most of the Bandai America releases.
Well, true.
There was a Bandai America transforming Wing Zero.
I just remember I own Arios and Gian Archer and
Gun Archer.
Gun Archer, whatever.
Don't be evangelist.
Oh, it's been a while since I watched 00. I forgot.
Yeah, Arios wasn't a very good figure, and Gun Archer was a worse figure.
Yes. I bought them both.
Those are not good representative examples of transforming Robot Damashi figures, I don't think.
Okay, back on topic for a second.
But seriously, we need Tauruses.
Gundam's on topic? Oh, wait.
Oh, now we actually know what super imaginative Chogokin O's will look like.
Looks a lot like that concept art.
It doesn't... In physical form, I don't think it really flatters itself.
No.
Well, neither did most of O's designs.
No,
or the concept art.
This looks worse. I didn't mind the concept art, but seeing it in physical form, it's... No. And I do like the designs of SIC a lot of times, too, but...
Yeah, the Double series was actually pretty spectacular.
It looks pretty... Double series looks great.
I would like to see how they handle the other combos, like Tajidoru or Puto Terra.
I imagine the unified combos will end up looking better than Tajidoru or Tatoba, I mean, because
yeah, but how many
it's all going to be one
now,
texture.
How many figures do you have to buy to get those?
No, Futokun was from Double, not O's, so that has nothing to do with this.
It's another thing on the shelf of items to never get released.
Along with SH Figure Arts Futokun, who hides in a corner, cowering from his SIC counterpart.
See, what they need to focus on with these SICs for O's is the greeds.
Yes.
That would probably work a lot better and might actually make UVA interesting.
Probably not.
But anyway, I mean, think about what an SIC Puto Terra could turn into. You know, there's a lot of potential to be had with that.
Oh, sure, sure.
I think Tataba's just... I mean, they have to start with that, but it's probably the worst choice to start with as an example for what this is going to be.
Yeah.
Although I do confess I like it better than Super Tataba.
Well, that's not
Yeah, hard. Well, many a great many things are better than Super Tataba.
But probably not Megamax.
Well, we'll find out in several months.
A couple months. Less than that, actually. Rental of it will probably be out in about a month.
Of course, we're still waiting for the Blu-ray version of Gokaiger vs. Gavin. Wonder whatever happened to that.
Yeah, well.
They're watching it on the shelf of never release.
So, anything else in the...
Yes, we have a schedule of releases through September.
Okay.
Damn.
All right, major items for July are Kamen Rider Deno Sword Form Figo Arts. Also, Kamen Rider Stronger Figo Arts.
This is good.
But is he inflatable?
It does not appear so, no.
And he doesn't have a thong either, so that's another bonus.
No, hey. No. Stronger didn't have the thong. It was the little boy who had a thong.
Oh.
That'll be the first run pack-in bonus.
Like the Kuroko.
Yeah.
Oh.
Little boy in a thong, maybe he'll be posed bending over.
I just hope we get an SH Figure Arts tackle, but we probably won't.
And if they do one, it needs to be specifically styled after the Movie Wars one.
Oh, yes.
Which would be more likely anyway. No, it's probably Miracle enough they made SIC tackle. So.
Yeah, she was packed with Stronger, though, anyway, so...
Well, yeah, but she didn't have to be.
True. Well, SIC does like their two packs now and then.
Oh, also in July, SIC Kamen Rider Kuga Mighty.
Yawn.
I thought they already put out a couple of Kugas.
Maybe it's a reissue.
Well, okay, you gotta remember, though, it's Kuga. There's always more Kugas.
True.
You know, up until O's, Kuga had the most forms of any single rider.
True. Didn't... Did he still beat Double on his forms?
I think... Well, maybe not after Extreme.
Gold Extreme.
Because... Oh, hell, I'm not going to count all the Kuga forms right now.
That's the spirit.
I don't care about the show that much.
Oh, and plus, with Kuga, it wasn't just mixing and matching halves.
Right. Sometimes it was just applying gold trim.
All right, releases for August are SH Figuarts Tiger, the Scorpio Zodiart, and... I know this isn't our topic, but some people might care. Super Robot Chogokin Might Gain.
I don't know a damn thing about Might Gain. And I guess it will stay that way. So what else?
And for August, we have SH Figuarts, the contract piece from Zolda that we decided not to try and pronounce, which is Tamashii Web exclusive. Ultract Gridman. And a thing we've all been waiting for, Super Robot Chogokin Daizujin.
I might have to get that Ultract Gridman. Of course, first I'd have to go find my original servo figure.
I still need to get a the deluxe whatever Drago's called in Japan.
I don't actually know what that's called in Japan. I suppose it's not really important anyway.
And that's all the important releases for the next few months.
But yeah, you know, Daijujin's mighty tempting.
Oh, it is.
Although I really wish they were doing Dragonzord battle mode. Of course, what I really wanted for that was Retrofire, because you could stylize the hell out of that mode.
Well, probably not happening now.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Maybe if they would have released some of the better-looking figures like Paleo Max instead of A, reruns of already released stuff that didn't sell the first time, and B, stuff that's not, you know, designed competently. Because I think at this point in the world of toys, poseability in both arms is kind of expected.
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. Huh.
Even deluxe Megazords usually have some poseability in both arms.
And, you know, it's the same
symmetrical poseability at that.
Right, it's the same poseability in both arms. You don't have one arm that can move forward and one arm that just spins around while extended out to the side. Whoever's designing these retro fires is kind of dumb, I gotta say.
What was your first clue?
The original Megazord.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, we haven't seen any new ones for a while, so maybe they've stopped.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it's not like they don't have a lot of unreleased molds they can milk for a while if they can get to continue anyway.
Maybe they sent them to Japan for the never-released shelf.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it.
No, they probably wouldn't let them...
Bandai of America has their own unreleased shelf anyway, it's just a lot smaller. The 2010 Dragonzord is probably there, too.
He's holding up the shelf.
Yeah, and plus, it's not like Bandai Japan would let Bandai America use their shelf.
Right.
Right.
Boy, Bandai Japan sure is dicks. Okay, so anything else from Tamashii whatever?
No, that's all the financial attacks for this week.
Excellent, and probably for the next few weeks.
Well, you never know.
Although, I guess pre-orders for Sword Form and Stronger are going to be going up sometime very soon.
Yeah, probably. You won't be able to get them.
Probably after this show goes up.
Well, I'm not planning on getting either of those figures anyway, so it doesn't really matter to me.
They're about the only Rider figure arts in the next while that actually interest me, so...
Well, I've got Sochaku Deno. That's good enough.
Well, that's kind of my thing, too. I have all the Denos already. All the Denos. Well, I don't have G Deno, but that doesn't count anyway. It's G Deno.
What about new Deno?
Yeah, I got that. Trilogy version. And most importantly, I have Deneb. After that, I was able to stop. It's a sickness.
It's the climax that never ends.
It goes on and on, my friends.
I'm ready for it to end for a while. I'm kind of on
either that or it's the candy that knocked it out.
It's the candy that fell out of Deneb's pants. So do we have any more news, or was that pretty much it?
Well, there's Akiba. That's about it this week.
There's all the Akiba Ranger stuff.
Well, yeah, Akiba Ranger figure arts, Akiba Ranger helmetless figure arts.
Bastards.
I wonder if those are going to be separate figures or just, you know, option heads.
It's Bandai. It'll probably be separate figures.
They took that lesson from the Tiger and Bunny people.
Oh, yeah. They'll be lottery.
And their legs will break off.
You know, it kind of sucks that those are getting those, but, you know, shows like Go Busters probably won't.
Okay. A little tip for everybody. Never buy a secondhand unhelmeted Akiba Yellow, or probably a helmeted Akiba Yellow either.
Or blue.
But either yellow way. Especially.
Yeah.
Just trust me on this. Don't do it.
Yeah. This is why I kind of... Somebody mentions buying Figmas like that. I'm like, no.
Well, I guess it depends on the Figma.
This is true.
The Kamen Rider Figmas are probably okay.
Well, yeah, but what the other 95%...
Except maybe Siren.
The other 90... Luckily, I got that one new. the other 95% of Figmas, though?
Well, yeah. But the other 95% of Figmas, nobody should care about anyway.
What about RoboCop and Link and Samus Aran?
That's within the 5%. No, not Samus.
Probably not RoboCop either.
Oh my.
You know, I still say they missed a perfect opportunity with that RoboCop Figma to not have Murphy's face underneath the helmet.
I know. Instead, something far more horrifying. Murphy, what have they done to you?
What haven't they done to him? That's why you shouldn't buy one secondhand.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
His head is kind of shaped like... I'll stop now.
You said coming.
Finally, new Fort Max lines.
Thank you for that insightful commentary.
Well done. All right, now that we're done with the news, Fort Max is going to tell us a little bit about Auto-Tune.
And now for something completely uninteresting.
Yes, this week on Power Rangers Samurai, apparently last week's good episode was a fluke.
Of course it was. It's Samurai.
It was a good episode.
It had a lot of singing, and by singing I mean auto-tuned.
What the f***ing singing. Hell? How? Why?
Because.
Because Saban?
Whatever. Yes.
You remember the last time?
However, it also amazingly had Super Samurai Pink.
Was this her debut in Shinkenger episode?
Well, I didn't watch it, so I don't know what episode it was adapted from.
Well, she only appeared twice.
It was the one where, what did the second episode of any Zords combining other than just the base Megazord?
The second episode had her beating the shit out of Akamaru.
Not this one, then.
Hmm.
So then it would be first appearance?
Yeah.
Oh. So it was the one that focused on Daigoyo, hence why there's probably singing instead, I guess.
Maybe this week it can be the microphone Zord. It would make as much sense as anything else they've done with that
Spider Zord.
Well, they could bring over that microphone toy from Gosager.
Oh, God, please no. Well, it's not like they're going to be using Gosager anyway.
The Gosei mic. With the King voice header, if I remember right.
Hmm.
Yeah, probably close enough.
All I know about that is that stupid f***ing ending thing.
Yeah.
How's that different from the regular ending theme for Gosager?
It's just even worse.
They added auto-tune to it.
Oh, yes.
So see, it would be good for this adaptation.
I guess so.
However, it also had some regular un-auto-tune bad singing from Bulk and Spike. Not quite as good as Bulk and Skull singing.
Oh.
And it did have Antonio with the awesome fish guitar.
Fish
guitar.
Yes.
I like how none of us watch this and we're just all sitting here like, what the f***?
Well, to be fair, that's our reaction with every Samurai episode.
This is true.
And note that it's the guitar itself that's the awesome part.
Because it's a fish.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, he can't play for shit.
Obviously, the awesome part is in Antonio.
No. Well, that was Samurai for this week.
I guess.
Oh, and it also had Bulk and Spike in the, on. Well, it had Spike on screen with the Rangers and actually talking to unmorphed Pink once.
So it's now slightly less creepy stalking. Or maybe more,
no,
I'm not sure.
Alright, so that was Samurai for this week. Why don't we jump into Space Time?
Okay. Please, God.
Switch on!
Okay. So, let's see here. New arc starting and a new school year starting.
Yeah, try to do this one a little bit quick.
I'm going. let's see here.
Hopefully your notes are abbreviated. You have notes, right?
I abbreviated your mom. She died.
They're abbreviated in that they don't have commercials.
Damn.
Anyhow, if I can start.
I'm waiting.
Y'all keep interrupting me.
We're interrupting you because you haven't started talking yet.
Because y'all keep interrupting me.
You sense a pattern here.
Anyhow.
It's superhero time. Somebody's always going to interrupt you.
Of course.
And I think we all know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, new school year. A lot of new students. Gintaro wants to befriend all of them, naturally, so he accosts the first one he sees. A wimpy little weasel named Haru. After he runs him halfway across the schoolyard, he thinks it's judo flip or by Haru's friend, who is a girl.
In quotation marks.
Well, first you mention him picking up the wrong person after dropping Haru on the table.
Abbreviated Fort Max.
Although, to be fair, that was pretty hilarious.
It was. Actually, this episode in general is very good, I think. But,
well,
anyway.
It helps considering that they finally got Sakamoto back.
Yeah, it's very obvious. Kengo and Yuki, of course, witness this as Ron drags Haru off. And while Kengo has a very old man comment about kids these days.
Well, Kengo is an old man.
And yeah, a teenager's body. Although, his body acts like an old man's, too. So.
Exactly. So, basically, he's an old man with a teenager's face.
Effectively, yeah. Although, he is Japanese, so you know what we talked about, how they age.
So, he could be 45.
He probably is, actually. Once he hits 46 or 50, though.
Mm. Well, yeah.
He won't be coming back for the next
unless
movie.
Unless he's secretly Rider 1.
Fujioka in a mask. He'll rip off his face and reveal Sega to Sanshiro at the end of the series.
Sega to Sanshiro did die in outer space.
He did. Oh my god. Oh no, wait. Maybe he's his father. Oh shit.
Boy.
The series will now end with Sega to Sanshiro coming back from the moon and throwing the chairman. Causing him to explode twice.
It'll reveal the chairman is actually the chairman of Sony. Okay, anyway, moving on to the actual classroom. Haruka is gone, and the actual new homeroom teacher is Osugi.
Well, or it's a different class, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she was their homeroom teacher for, you know, all of two episodes.
Well, it's her fault for coming in at the end of the semester.
So, yes, no Space Hurricane Blue. Instead, we get Osugi and his picture.
Yes.
The picture.
Still the same picture?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the same taped picture on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has set Gintaro, Kengo, and Yuki in the front of the class so he can keep an eye on him. And he promises him that he'll be keeping an eye on them after class, too. Which, as is par for the course with Osugi, f***ing creepy.
And don't forget the suspender snapping.
Oh, yes, in the front of the class with him yelling and moaning and... Those poor children. Somebody
I'm gonna watch this episode later and take a shot every time someone should be saying, "I need an adult."
Actually, that would be a good idea because Haru then gets approached by Libra. Libra hands him a switch and then takes off while transforming behind a bush where Haru hears some students greet him as Sensei. So he knows that Libra is one of the teachers. However, he takes a switch anyway, while Osugi makes good on his promise to stalk the Kamen Rider Club, and then gets attacked by food droids. Violently attacked, actually.
And first, falls for, of course, the,
Look, Gowling. There's Sonoa!
Falls for the, orc distraction trick.
Yeah, Yuki calls out, "Hey, look, there's Miss Sonata," and then he looks, and then she attacks him brutally
and keeps looking and goes that way, still looking.
Yes, but Ryusei sees Haru with the switch and stalks him up to. There's a lot of stalking in this episode, actually, and stalks him up to the rooftop where he and Ran are talking, and then Haru transforms into a flea.
No, not a flea. Did you actually watch this episode?
A fly.
Because they actually, you know, they did the flea joke themselves.
That's what I was thinking of.
Good job.
I'm sorry. Anyway, he transforms into a Zodiac, leaps off the damn building. Meanwhile, Shun and Miu come across him and chase him down.
In the Mustang.
Yeah.
A red Mustang convertible.
Yes. American car. That runs out of gas.
Well, of course it ran out of gas. It's an American car.
That's kind of what
it's a 70s American car.
Exactly.
And then Gintaro makes his entrance on his motorcycle, amazingly enough.
Although, you're missing the part where Miu makes veiled comments to Shun.
After all your big talk.
Yes.
You ran out of gas. That's not a double meaning at all.
Oh, that's actually a good amount of that. Another place. But yes,
just now got it, didn't you?
Yeah, he did.
I wasn't even paying that much attention to them, to be honest with you.
Well done.
It's kind of like I don't really pay that much attention to Shun anymore anyhow.
Well, it's not like he matters anymore.
Exactly, so I wasn't really paying any attention to it.
You're not going
to
cough up any more cash for the Power Dizer.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Or at least not until the figure art gets released.
The show will be canceled by the time the figure art gets released, or ended by the time the figure art gets released.
Anyhow, we get a very good fight utilizing the motorcycle, which shows us that, yes, Sakamoto is back, finally. Because that
can't be. Of course, we really get proof of that when Meteor shows up.
Definitely. But yeah, this cannot be anybody but Sakamoto.
Well, no, I mean, that was obvious with the part at the beginning on the school ground with people flipping over tables and things.
Oh, yeah. Gintaro gets tossed off the bike and switches to hopping and magic hand, which is an awesome kind of combination, really. For a few minutes, anyway.
He needs to use hopping and hopping and the giant foot.
Yeah.
Aren't those the same switch spot, though?
No, I don't think he's used hopping and giant foot. I don't think he's really used hopping much since.
That's what I mean. Aren't they both the right leg?
Yeah,
might be,
both right leg.
Too bad.
Then Meteor comes in and starts beating the shit out of the Zodiart.
Actually, first, doesn't he get a call?
Well, that's. No.
Well, that was where they cleared up the flea fly thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yes, and it's the fact that Kengo called him just to say that no, that's not a flea, it's a fly.
Yes.
Dumbass.
Anyway.
When Meteor shows up and then the Zodiart tries to jump or fly away and Meteor keeps grabbing him out of the air to beat him more.
Yes, and all just like the rapid series of punches he lays on him when he first comes in, too.
Uh-huh.
Just very nice direction overall.
Yeah.
So it took Beyblade to remind Meteor that he has a pair?
But yeah, Meteor beats the complete and total shit out of him. Which is really nice for, like, a first fight. And he just walks off. He's like, yeah, he's too weak. Fuck this shit. I'm not bothering with this crap.
He's not strong enough to evolve into Ares.
And then
so
starts beating him up again.
Speaking of getting beat up, after the fly Zodiart takes off, Gintaro gets flipped for the second of third time in this episode by Ron. Meanwhile,
you think after a while he'd catch on to that.
Yeah, but he does not.
It's Gintaro.
Yeah, Gintaro.
Meanwhile, Hayami and Virgo are having a discussion where he doesn't really hide the fact that – you can kind of tell she's on to the fact that he pulled one over on her last episode.
Or that in some way or another, cancer's gone.
Yeah, well, they knew that he got his ass kicked by Meteor anyway,
well,
apparently.
Or that he's responsible for cancer being gone.
Yeah, because he does not hide it in the slightest bit.
He's not really concerned about that anymore.
No. Gintaro gets snagged by Osugi trying to sneak into the Rider Club, while Ron then decides to head down to the teacher's lounge after Haru mentions that, hey, guess what? Libra's a teacher. Gintaro's flipped yet again, and with the mag phone flying out. However, then...
And then the idiot hats come on.
Yes, Yuki decides to call right then and there.
Wait. The idiot hat's come on. It's Yuki.
The idiot hat has never left.
Yuki no, has I wasn't talking about her. I'm talking about everybody else.
Gintaro never left for Gintaro either. So, yes. She blabs the name of the rabbit hutch because he can't get her to shut up.
And he can't turn off speakerphone.
Yeah, apparently so. Because so Osugi ends up hearing that.
I think it's less speakerphone and more that she's yelling.
Well, yes, there's that too. The fly attacks the Rider Club. Ron tries to get through to him, but that doesn't help any. Ryusei runs off like the apparent pussy that they think he is. But before, naturally, Tomoko can get hurt by him, then, of course, he conveniently transforms then and there and saves her. Again, they're really laying that on a little thick.
I'm sure it's all just a coincidence.
Sure. Anyway, Meteor decides to go kick his ass again because the Fly Zodiac has transformed, which is what caught his interest, so that's why he's actually fighting him again. But then the Dust Tards show up. So he transforms into Meteor Storm and kicks some Tard ass.
Okay, so Fly evolving like that bothers me because they act like they've never seen that behavior before. But it's happened several times already.
But it hasn't happened for a while, right?
Like that, though? I'm trying to remember the last time it might have...
No, remember Unicorn? That was the first time it happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty
sure...
Plus,
this is they may have decided to just go Kuga with it.
Yeah, this is true. Anyway, Meteor beats the Dust Tards, and then Gintaro arrives. Electric doesn't do much good, while neither does Fire, because Ron gets in his way.
That's odd. Everybody knows bug types are weak to fire.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's because someone got in the way.
Right.
Meanwhile, Kingo is running off to the rabbit hutch to snag the net switch because Fly has shown the ability to turn into hundreds of freaking flies, which makes him impossible to hit.
But first...
Yes, I was getting that. Osugi is at a rabbit hutch. And where he gets attacked by a rabbit.
No, not just any rabbit, Mr. Bun.
That's no ordinary rabbit.
And then he apologizes to Mr. Bun.
I was expecting him to start bleeding profusely or something. Like,
oh, he can't. No, he can't bleed profusely. It's Toku.
Yeah, I know, but it's like kind of frightening for a moment. However. Speaking of the idiot hats, as Kingo snags the net switch and starts to go out, he is greeted by the most frightening to-be-continued image in the entire series, Osugi's face.
Yes.
Thank God you said face.
Well, I'm going to let you use your imagination on that one.
Okay, so obviously...
Well, considering whose locker he thinks it is.
Yeah. Next week, Osugi flips his shit. Something is happening at Ryusei's old school. Gee, I wonder what. And more beating the shit out of a nerd.
Okay, so I guess now they're going to have to find a closet in the rabbit hutch and lock Osugi in there forever so he can't blend.
Yeah. Oh, nobody will miss him.
And while there's also a promo at the end of this episode for the Superhero Tyson Net movies, which look hilarious. Because
well, one of the net movies is called Superhero Disaster, and I think that's kind of appropriate.
Yeah, lamp shading the similarity between Decade Complete and Gokai Silver Gold Mode, or Forze and Red Buster in detective outfits in costume.
And there's also one where you have. Guy and one of the Tauroses arguing over whether Gokai's a ripoff of Decade.
And then you have Narutaki in the Forze classroom.
Yeah, the net movies would probably be better than the actual movie itself.
And Four's piloting one of the GoBuster mechs.
No, that's in the actual movie where he's piloting the rabbit, apparently.
GoBuster O with, you know, drill and rocket add-ons.
Yeah, apparently it looks like it's probably just Red Buster and Forza in the cockpits, more than likely.
What about Blue?
Ah.
I mean, it makes sense that they would omit Yellow, because it's the just, girl. Like Geki, just like Geki Ranger, then.
You know what? I just had a thought. We see, I was looking at the preview for next week again. We see the school uniforms of the girls, and isn't that the same school uniform that Nadashiko had in Megamax?
I haven't seen Megamax.
Well, just from the trailers.
Well, that's been, you know, months ago. I don't remember.
Well, yeah, but that's – I just now noticed that. That could be interesting if they end up trying to tie that together somehow.
They won't.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, I do.
They just have the spare costume lying around.
Sure. Okay, so that's Forza. Time for Buster.
It's Morphin time!
It's Morphin!
Okay, then.
That was a deep sigh.
Well, it's Monday.
Getting nearly concussed will probably do that to you.
Yeah, trust me. As I said, I've been there. Something far, far thicker than a car hood.
Your mom?
No, but that's a good one. Steel All state. Right.
Paladin.
This week on Gaugaigar.
Okay, the episode begins with the GoBusters fighting off another Megazord, and Hiromu calls for the combination at last. But their timing is off and the machines can't link, ending the combat simulation, which Nick kindly points out is their 20th failure in a row.
Good job, guys.
Hiromu insists on trying again to get the timing right, but Ryuji points out that they have no chance of actually succeeding at things, which I'd have to agree with.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's like you keep failing over and over and over again. Sometimes you just need to step back.
And yet we all keep showing up every week.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
All right, the commander explains the functions of GoBuster O and says that the bulk of the combination depends on Hiromu, since Ace is the centerpiece of the design. The combination effect should repel enemy attacks while the robots come together, but the systems are still vulnerable if they can't connect.
Gee, this sounds familiar. But it is nice, I know we keep saying this, to see them give explanations to this kind of stuff.
Even if it maybe doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that might not make any sense, but they're at least explaining it in their own world setting.
Oh, it's okay. The combination sequence actually repels the monsters. Don't bother explaining that.
Well, that's usually taken for granted in every single series.
Well, I always assume that the combination sequence that we see is just like time expanded, and it actually happens a lot faster than that.
Not in this series.
No, I guess not.
Because, like, Gokaio, when it would transform out of stock footage, it would just do it instantly.
Right, that's what I'm
Everything
saying.
Everything would fly
and
out
that,
in, like,
And it works that way
for
most Megazords, too.
Yeah.
When it's necessary, it just happens instantly in a flash.
But not in this case, apparently.
Right.
So anyway, Ryuji suggests that more practice isn't exactly what they need this time, but nobody else understands why. Meanwhile, the Megazord captured by Special Ops 2 weeks ago is still locked up in the hangar when a small chip flies away from the supposedly dead enemy, slipping out of the base and reuniting with Enter, who has just endured another one-sided conversation with the Messiah.
Yeah, Messiah is just really not very...
Together?
No, not very together. It's just, it ends up not being that threatening because it's just yelling the same things over and over again. Luckily, Enter is, so that makes up for it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure without Enter to do the work, this wouldn't even be a problem.
So Messiah is basically a more masculine version of Gil.
Well, Gil is more entertaining.
And what I'm saying is, if they could just do away with Enter, they'd probably be done. Except for, you know, going and trying to rescue the people that are probably dead anyway.
So Enter takes the chip and decides to set out on his latest plan to take down the GoBusters for good. At the same time, Nick reminds Hiromu of the first time he and Ryuji met years ago before the Messiah attack, where Ryuji was trying to teach Hiromu how to skip stones across a lake.
I'm sure that went great.
And despite Nick's assertion that asking for help would actually improve their process, Hiromu insists on resuming training alone. Because Reds have to be stubborn like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Red. He knows everything.
Of course.
And he's three times as fast.
Well, he is. I like later in the episode where Nick says, "You're a real hard guy to get along with. You know that?"
He's not wrong.
No, he's not.
Not at all.
Anyway, Enter follows the data trail back to the opening in Special Ops HQ and uses his metavirus to create Sprayroid out of a fire extinguisher.
Okay.
So the monitors recognize abnormal Energon readings and an impending Megazord transmission, and the GoBusters realize the Megazord will drop directly on top of the base. So as Enter breaks in, the team runs off to confront him again, momentarily stopped when Enter deploys a team of... Do the foot soldiers in GoBusters have a name yet?
They do, but I don't remember what it is.
All right, so time to make up our own name for something, finally.
Digital Dustards?
No. All right, good talk, guys.
All right. Enter finds the Megazord shell and decides to re-upload the program to it while Sprayroid destroys everything in the hangar. And since they were smart enough to put the Megazord shell in the farthest hangar available, Commander is willing to shut everything else down and self-destruct that hangar if necessary.
That is some surprisingly considerate forethought of them, to be honest. Like, we're going to take this into the base, but we're going to put it in the furthest one possibly away.
Yeah.
Just in case something goes wrong, which it will.
I also liked Enter's comment on the Metaroids. Lack of eloquency.
And that how much the base reminds him of home.
One wish one can make more eloquent Metaroids.
Well, Sprayroid is
kind of awesome in this episode.
Sprayroid is kind of insane.
So then what happens?
The GoBusters race through the base but are locked inside the hangar with the virus because of their security systems. Redbuster attacks Enter, but Enter is able to hold him off with one hand while hacking the base's security systems.
Well, it's not their security systems because of it's Enter that walks in.
Yeah, Enter hacks the GoBuster systems, and Morishita and Miho can't actually get through to it.
Who?
But the Bridge Bunnies.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Ken, they don't have names.
But Enter is just proving more and more again why he's the best character in this series.
And to top that off, Enter tentacle rapes the GoBusters yet again.
Then hands them to the Metaroid.
He teleports himself out while Sprayroid is in the base to die.
First, he one-handedly... one-handedly fight is just nonchalantly just blocking all of Red's attacks while balancing the laptop on its other.
He said that.
Yeah.
So Sprayroid is left behind to hold on to the restrained GoBusters until the explosion kills all four of them. Ryuji manages to use his super strength to break open the cables and throws Hiromu out of the door before the security gates close yet again, instructing Red to use GoBuster Ace to save their asses.
And Ryuji does it without even a moment's hesitation. I'm really noticing Ryuji seems more like the leader than Hiromu. Just in the way he acts and the way they interact.
Yeah, I mean, it works like that in older Sentai sometimes.
Yeah. It's just kind of a nice change of pace because
that could work like that in Mega Ranger, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you,
Fort Max. Shares a executive producer.
That's what he meant.
Thank you, Fort Max.
But it's a nice change of pace.
That's not the only example, but yes.
Yeah, it's just an obvious one. But it's a nice change of pace,
it's a way to blend up the dynamic of the group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So GoBuster Ace is deployed through emergency release, which means straight to robot mode. Which we'll probably be seeing from now on, sadly.
Most likely.
Just in time to deal with the new Megazord teleporting in, which by sheer coincidence looks exactly like the Megazord from the simulation at the beginning.
Yeah, it's beta type.
Let's see, beta type, is that the Stingray one?
The big, really wide.
The dome head one.
Yeah, the Stingray type.
Yeah, yeah.
And since the Megazord burns through Ace's saber, Hiromu grabs the Megazord's arm and uses that to burn through the hangar doors with barely a second to spare for the other busters to get out. Ryuji and Yoko take control of their machines to help Ace out, and Hiromu calls for combination again because the encounter has helped him realize the previous flaw. His unwillingness to depend on the other busters for their part in the sequence is what threw off their timing.
And somehow through that entire explosion, the other Megazord actually did survive.
Huh.
But, yeah, it's, now it's time for Final Fusion. Because that is literally what it is.
But there is no requesting authorization.
Well,
it's an emergency.
That. Yeah.
You can imagine the commander shattered the panel for the button, right?
Sure.
No, that would be the Bridge Bunny.
And, of course, they have to deploy yet another sword for Ace. And then the King of Buster Machines is born.
Complete with a protect wall.
And by now they're back to using traditional Megazord fighting sequences, which is very disappointing to me.
Well, it's just raining that day.
Well, it's in a that typical mountainside set, and they just basically cut straight to the finishing attack, and then that's it.
And the suit doesn't look that great.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
So it's representative of the toys then.
It doesn't really seem like it is going to be something that moves all that well, just because of that one big gorilla part on the chest that just kind of hangs off.
Well, kind of show, which not like context, they were designed to combine originally either.
See, it's not the. Of course, I should also mention the finishing attack happens within a tunnel. So again, Galgagar. But it's not a bad mecha fight. It's just not
a good one.
What it has been up until now. And of course, you know, there's a lot of focus on the mecha in this episode, and there's a lot of thought put into it. It's just not what it was in the first couple episodes, obviously.
Well, I guess in one way it makes sense, too, because the combined form shouldn't be as mobile as Ace by itself.
They do also make a point several times in the episode that the combined form can only be utilized for a short amount of time. So it begs the question of how long they'll stick to that.
So it's like the engines from Goanger.
Mm.
Or Gundams from Seed.
I imagine
or
we'll
Ultraman.
I imagine we'll still see a good amount of fighting with Ace itself.
Hopefully. I mean, those seem to be the best fights.
Yeah.
So if the combination time exceeds 3 minutes, GoBuster King will never rise again.
Well, we might see Ace again. They can't have blown through the CGI budget this early.
Yeah, well, next episode, the title is... What was it? It was something about Ace, actually, because it's actually focused on the Ace not being... Oh, yeah, Ace needs repairing.
What's repairing?
Apparently, that's what the problem is. I think it was one of the techs that broke Ace.
Yeah, in the next episode, which looks like an interesting kind of bit where we actually see some focus on, you know, just one of the grunt workers in the hangar.
It's time for repairs.
It's time for below decks.
No, that doesn't happen until season 7. but no, if they actually will establish in dialogue at some point that GoBuster O doesn't move like Ace does because it's three heavy combined machines...
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I will accept that and accept that it's a slow plotting deal that can just absorb a lot of hits.
Yeah, it's just like a tank, basically. It hits hard, it takes a lot of hits, but we can't use it for very long.
Yeah, I mean, I would be perfectly fine with that, and even, you know, with the reduced activity.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's one episode where the strategy is outrun their big hulking robot.
And then they have to switch to car mode on the cheetah.
Well,
but,
I mean, they could leverage that the same way that Kabuto did with the cast-off.
This is true.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible.
We'll just see how this plays out over the next few episodes and see how consistent they are with it.
I noticed they changed the beginning of the ending theme just a little bit. Because now when they have them starting up the dance, they actually work the Buddyroids in, including Usada.
But how does he dance?
Probably not very well.
No, he does not.
No, one thing I will appreciate with GoBusters, which you mentioned before, is that they are putting effort into explaining stuff to some extent, and at least are being internally consistent so far.
And not even just explaining it, oftentimes showing it.
Yeah.
Because the flashy background during the combination sequence, you then see that same flashy background as the sheet.
It has a point, yeah.
Yeah.
That flashy background is actually happening because it's surrounding them.
Just like RPM with the transformation explosions.
Or just like Gal Gaigar with its transformation sequence again.
But no, I'm thinking of weaponizing the explosion.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They did that time. And, you know, establishing that it's actually there.
Yeah, or like Dynaman did in the Gokaiger and Gokusager movie. Which was obviously taken straight from RPM anyway.
I'm sure we'll see what they sound like when they explode.
Of course, at that rate, they have to copy Bokanger and have somebody catch on fire with the roll call explosion.
While wearing a sombrero?
It's like next week we see
the
either...
The sombrero is optional.
Several different Megazords or one hell of a big one. Because it looks like a bunch of them walking around in like a, you know, Congo line. And that's seriously what it looks like.
Maybe it's a Megazord dance number.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Probably better than Saban's musical interludes.
Or with Disney's dance-offs.
Auto-tuned Megazords.
You know, one thing
with that conversation, Killer, I think it's time for a break.
Sure.
We'll be back with what replaces Power Playback this week and a review of Go Buster Ace, finally.
Yeah.
You're listening to Superhero Time.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna, and do you like video games? Do you like people who like video games? Well, if so, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. It's the weekly video game podcast of record. News, rumors, in-depth discussion of new and retro gaming, plus the occasional contest or giveaway. So if you game, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. Check us out at tfradio.net, a proud member of the Transformers Internet Radio Network.
The third strike, you're on the Street Fighter 3.
And now back to action with Superhero Time.
Okay, so Garo Mekai Senki just wrapped up. And it sure was more Garo.
Yes, it was.
So the first series aired from 2005 to 2006, right?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah. And so it went until 2010 or 2011. Was it 2010 the movie came out, Red Requiem?
Well, it's 20 because it took about almost a year for the DVD and Blu-ray to come out, right?
Okay, so we'll go with 2010. That's probably
about 2010.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah, it's a very unique thing in Tokusatsu, and I don't think I've ever seen any other series do that, where they've not only literally come back after so much time, but they literally brought nearly everybody back.
Nearly?
Mark Musashi.
Well, yeah, but his character died.
Yeah, I know.
So but I don't that think is... that really—I don't think that counts either. They brought back everyone whose characters were alive.
Well, he was a suit actor in the first series also, but I don't think he was in this series for that.
Well, he was probably a suit actor in the first one because they had him, you know, on screen too,
or vice versa.
I mean, you know, it's probably a matter of getting double duty out of him.
Yeah, this is true.
But anyway, the point is, Garo came back.
Yes, it did.
Why was that?
Because Keita Amamiya is kind of insane,
and apparently has a lot of money,
or at least took him that long to get that much more money so he could make another series.
I hope it doesn't take another 4.5 years this time.
Well, this time we know that there is a movie coming right up after it.
Well, wasn't Midnight Sun released not long after the series ended?
Yeah, but that was a TV special originally, wasn't it?
Either TV special or direct-to-video, but still.
Yeah, I want to say, I came in the Garo late, not since last year, but I think it was a TV special initially, and then they cut it together as a movie later on.
In either case...
Yeah.
I completely lost where I was going with that. But at that exact second, I had something really cool, I'm sure. You'll just have to take my word for it.
Of course.
So, yeah, nobody else is actually interested in talking about this with us. So Ken and I are going to just kind of go over Garo Mekai Senki overall and just kind of close the series out for ourselves in lieu of a proper power playback.
Yeah, mostly it would probably be silence anyway, so this way is probably easier.
Yeah, maybe so. Of course, if we could inconvenience Fort Max by doing this, I'd be all for it.
This is true.
Of course, there's no telling what he'd be off doing while we're talking about something he's not interested in, so maybe this is for the best. So anyway...
It's a image I didn't want.
I think I already have that as an intro quote for you.
Damn it. Oh, okay. At least you can... I get a lot of mental images I don't want here. I noticed that.
Yeah. We're talented that way.
That's one way to put it.
Of course, then, I mean, even on Twitter it'll happen because I'll be describing eating a Long John.
Or various restroom adventures.
Well, yeah, but you get that on the show, too.
Yeah, this is true.
I'm just referring to yesterday relative to the time we actually recorded this when I was talking about the Long John I was eating.
I haven't been paying attention to Twitter the past couple of days, so I missed that.
Lucky! So anyway, we were talking about Garo, and I still can't remember where I was going with what I was talking about in the first place.
Well, it's been 5 to 6 years, and they
brought... we already mentioned that.
Everybody back that mattered.
Yeah. There's just something specific I wanted to get into from that, and it like has completely run away from me. Well. And it's probably gone until we're about halfway through doing this, where it won't even matter anymore.
Probably.
This is off to a great start so far. Okay, so with the original Garo, you know, it set up the basis for the series mythology, introducing Mekai Knights, eventually Mekai Priests, the idea around the horrors. Mm-hmm. So this time we didn't have to go through all of that over again. So
it allows them to really just kind of jump straight into it.
And it was able to make the series more about building the world of the Mekai Knights and the overall order around them.
Which is really nice, too, because you can tell it's like something Amamiya seemed to have in mind as he was going along. Because everything does fit very well with the first series and Red Requiem and with Midnight Sun. So it all flows very well if you watch it all together all in a row.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of world building in this series.
Yeah, I mean, somebody who's just going to come into this without having watched any of the stuff before, it's going to be really confusing.
By about episode 7.
By episode 2, I would say. Well,
the first 5 or so episodes until you get to the point where it starts switching off between Garo and Zero focused episodes are really kind of, you know, just focus episodic things. And it's like the thing with the Goryu, if you hadn't seen Red Requiem, well, it doesn't really matter if you hadn't seen Red Requiem because that was the first time they were introduced anyway and they didn't explain them there.
Right, and actually the way they came up in Mekai Senki then kind of made Red Requiem seem out of order.
Almost until you get later on in Mekai Senki.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, in the first episode of Mekai Senki, it started off a lot like an original Garo episode.
Blood, guts,
and a naked woman.
And that seems very... Once you get later in the series, that seems very deliberate, because that stuff was almost over the first series to an extent where it was distracting at times.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the first Garo series, the excessive violence and the nudity seem to be added in almost afterthought, like where they're justifying their late night time slot and the so-called aim for being a more adult toku series.
Although there were some episodes that were legitimately screwed up, but there are some episodes in this series that are legitimately screwed up without being necessarily over-the-top violent.
You're thinking of the tree, aren't you?
I'm thinking of the tree, I'm thinking of the sewer tops, I'm thinking of, what was the other one? Just that girl and her mom.
Yeah. And all those were first half of Mekai Senki, so.
Yeah, and those are psychologically messed up.
Yeah. But, you know, after that first episode, a lot of the really gratuitous part of it just went away.
Yeah, and it wasn't for the fact of trying to tone it down, it seemed like. They just, because they still used that stuff when they wanted to on occasion, but it wasn't just all over the place. It seemed more like they did that, like, in the first 5 minutes just to kind of get the point across, okay, this is not for children, please step away.
Well, and it's so, like, the people who were remember watching the first Garo series were like, oh yeah, this is the same deal, there's the breasts.
Yeah, even the opening has them circulating.
Yeah, for the first half of the series, that was the main exposure, so to speak. But no, the whole point of that is I find it interesting that they moved basically immediately away from that element.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a little bit more in the second half, like one short instance, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of surprised that we got to see that when Ganon showed up, that, okay, she's a female, and she's evil, and that does not surprise me, but I'm surprised she wasn't naked.
Right. It kind of blew the pattern of the last two final villains.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you know, the woman they had playing Ganon's body was a little bit older, and that probably wouldn't have been as fun.
Yes. She reminded me a lot of...
Machiko Soga, I know, I saw it
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
yeah. But anyway, no... I mean, this series seemed to be like, okay, we've established ourselves back originally, and we've been a theatrical movie already. Let's just move on and do what we're going to do.
Because
and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and that late at night, really, the people that are going to be watching it as it airs are going to be the people that already know what Garo is about, more than likely.
Probably so.
Because basically, they just have the first episode is the only one that kind of just stands by itself, and it doesn't really feel overtly connected to everything else.
Except for right at the end.
But once you hit... Well, of course, when Sigma shows up and all that, that sets up stuff later on. But
yeah,
for stuff in the past, it doesn't really hit until, you know, Kaoru shows up, and then Rei shows up, and all the old characters start showing up.
Right. Yeah, so at the end of the first episode, we're introduced into the overarching plot element, which is guy in a red mask with an Ankh hand shows up, and marks Koga with a seal of oblivion.
And that is another nice thing that I do appreciate, the fact that we have an overarching plot from the very beginning. Now, in retrospect, the first series does have an overarching plot because of who Kiba ends up being, but it still felt... In the first series, it feels like the plot doesn't not really get started until you basically hit the midpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing of any kind of plot in the first half of the original series is Kaoru's a horror magnet.
Yeah, and Rei wants to kill everybody.
Right. But, I mean, that's kind of a weak definition of plot.
Yeah.
It's really just plot device.
Yeah, it is... The first half of the first series is very definitely by the book episodic.
Yeah. Cause I don't think they were willing to take as much chances in the way they were telling the story then
until
it got more established.
Yeah, until they were sure that we've been on the air for a quarter of the year, now let's actually do stuff.
Right. So yeah, I mean, basically the first half of Mekai Senki was episodic with brief mentions of, oh yeah, I'm dying.
Yeah, they do build things here and there because there is, of course, just like with the first series, episode 7 is the one where things kind of just start kicking you in the balls. Because that's when Koga and Mr. Onkan first fight.
Right.
And it's funny the way that starts out, too, is because it starts out almost exactly like his final fight with Kiba, until you realize it's just this entire circulating mass of steel girders in the air.
Yeah. And it just gets ridiculous.
Yeah, but of course that's just like his first fight with Zero in the first series,
where they take, like, 5 minutes to fall down a building.
But yeah, and yet... It was awesome at the same time.
Right. Well, it's not exactly like in the original where they spend 20 minutes on a piece of rock falling out of the sky.
Yes, this is
true.
And
then another 15 minutes with it on the ground.
Mamma Mia has realize that gravity exists now a bit better. And yeah, he realized gravity exists, basically. That's what it is. So he realized he had to make sure his villain could levitate everything. That way all the major fights could happen in midair.
Yes. So different this time around also is there's not the creepy little girl watchdogs. They actually get like some proper boss
aged
woman.
Person.
Well, in this cathedral thing, that seems better than, you know, a dark hole in the wall.
Yeah. And of course that is a sign that Koga is kind of moving up in the ranks, so to speak.
Although, wasn't Garo the highest rank of knight anyway?
Yeah, but he was still answering to those little bitches.
Yeah, well.
But you get the impression that Grace has a lot more pull than the watchdogs did.
Probably so. Of course, there's only one of her two that helps.
Yeah.
So Koga gets a sidekick this time around, too.
Yeah. At first, I wasn't really sure where they were going with that, obviously, because as you saw from me on Twitter when I was catching up with the series midway through, I completely mistook what they were doing.
Yeah.
Which I think was the point.
Yeah, probably so. Although it also led us into one of the most cliche tropes ever, but...
Yeah.
Some things you just can't help, I guess.
Yeah, but by the end of the series, Leo did grow on me a bit. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of nice to have a Makai priest perspective through the entire series instead of just... You know, Jabby showing up for two episodes and then getting killed before getting resurrected again.
Yeah. Well, if Midnight Sun did anything good for us, it did that.
That's about it, really, because otherwise Midnight Sun is a little bit boring.
Yeah.
It's like the first half, and then the second half is just kind of running around and fighting, and then Koga gets another upgrade, and then the thing's dead.
Right.
Why was Dan there in the first place?
Heck if I know. Okay, so what's some of the cool things that Makai Senki did in the first half when it was going episode to episode? I remember you calling out the motorcycle fight specifically.
Oh yeah, the motorcycle fight, besides being kind of a deliberate, we can do motorcycle fights better than Kamen Rider can. That was really impressive, especially so early on.
Mm-hmm. That was episode 6, I think?
That was episode 3.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because that was when we first saw Rei at the end of the episode, and that was when we were getting – that's the first time we really saw that, okay, Leo's sticking around. He's not just going to be one of those people that drifts in one episode and disappears the next.
Except when the episodes don't focus on Koga.
Yeah, which was another cool thing. Mm-hmm. And that we got – although Rei ended up not really mattering as much towards the end of the series as I would have liked, It was nice to see episodes just solely focused on Zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole thing where it's expanding that, okay, stuff's going on all over the place, even though most of the time we're only just following what Garo has to do.
Mm-hmm. And what's funny is that I think Zero actually had some of the better episodic episodes. The better episodic stories.
The better standalones?
Yes.
Well, no, I mean, the episode with the tree, it was a pretty interesting hook.
Yeah, and not to mention kind of really creepy as f*** by the time you got to the end of the episode.
Well, I think that was kind of the point, too,
oh, yeah.
Wasn't it?
And, but that they did it, that they were able to pull that off, though, is impressive, because that's not always an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And then not only did we get episode focusing on Zero, we got one episode focused just on Jabby.
Yeah.
With basically a cameo from Koga at the start.
And the end, and that was it. Which I can't really complain about, because...
Well, no.
Of course, that does go towards the... where they focus a lot more heavily on the Makai priest in this series.
Yeah, because the overall... The whole thing they were going for was to figure out the differences between Makai Knights and Makai priests, how they could coexist... And what would happen if that was threatened?
And the fun part of that is that if you go back, they do mention, you know, hostilities and kind of, you know, the Makai Knights taking over for them. Yeah. If I remember right, that kind of does also retroactively make Red Requiem feel a lot more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
because there you had a trio of Makai priests, one of which who betrayed Koga, and then of course Rekka, who factors in heavily later on here.
And they were already starting to try to hunt horrors on their own.
Yeah.
Red Requiem, it could even be treated like a prequel to Makai Senki in that sense.
Yeah, especially because, you know, as soon as you come into Makai Senki, Koga still has Rekka's little goldfish that Zaraba nicknamed Kaoru.
Yeah. Of course, that doesn't last too long either.
No, thanks to Sigma. You know, when you're talking about Makai Senki out loud, it really starts to sound like you're talking about a Mega Man X game.
Well, you know, some of the fights in this were kind of video game-ish, weren't they?
Well, they often are, really. I've always said that at first, the first thing that the original Garo reminded me of, just straight out of the gate, was Devil May Cry. Because you had this demon hunter in a long trench coat with a sword fighting really fast against demons left and right.
Well, that itself is kind of a Japanese trope.
Yeah,
know.
But just the way it ends up looking reminds me a lot of, like, the earlier Devil May Cry games.
Remember there was the episode with the pillars that Koga had to knock out before he could get at the horror?
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally a video game fight setup if you ever saw one.
Well, that's kind of also the end of the series, too.
No, it was earlier in the series.
No, I'm talking about they do the same thing at the end of the series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Big boss
well,
fight.
Yeah, and Idea itself looked like some final video game boss, too.
Yeah, and actually, the very end fight in the series reminds me a lot of, like, an MMO raid battle.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't played any of those.
Well, it's like, okay, I play City of Heroes from time to time, and there's a few big in-game bosses where, like, you will have to go around and knock out these certain things to make the central part vulnerable. One of the most common ones, that's exactly how it runs. And that is exactly how fighting Adia at the end of the series was. Complete with, you know, dozens of people at the same time.
Well, okay, let's talk about that a little bit, because at the end of Makai Senki, we finally got to see the army of Makai Knights, which were only really implied at points previous in the series.
Yeah. And then, on the one hand, it's nice. On the other hand, they don't look that great. But
I was thinking about that, though.
At the same time,
it kind of makes sense if, you know, the rank and file of the Knight Order does not have all the specialized armor and tricks like the higher ranks do.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Since there are so many, I do wonder if there are just a lot of them that are basically grunts. Because
it would seem to make sense.
Well, if you remember in the Red Requiem, what was it called? I forgot what the horror in that movie was called, but she had killed a hell of a lot of Makai Knights, and you have to think, if you lost as many people that were as powerful as, say, Zero or Dan or Garo, that would be almost catastrophic with what they do.
Right.
So, also, there's another part midway through the series where Rei comes to, you know, help out the other Makai Knight, and before he can give his name, he gets killed. And obviously, he was not really up to snuff.
Yeah.
So, if you look at it like that, besides the fact that they obviously, just from an art resources standpoint, there was no way in hell they could have designed that many different intricate armors, considering every armor is different. Hell, the last intricate armor we get to see in the series, Rodo, is always CGI.
Well, and actually, if you look close after that point, every suit that's not Garo is a CGI construct. Even Zero got turned into CGI.
I think there are a couple of shots, like in the where I think we do actually see Zero as not, but a lot of that was also in the Makai realm, and you know everything there is going to be CGI anyway.
Yeah,
but the mechanical foot soldiers that Sigma had at the end, they were all CGI too. So it seems like at a certain point, they did kind of run out of their suit budget. Mm-hmm. And that is quite evident. But luckily, their CGI is a lot better than it was in the first series, or else they'd be kind of screwed.
Well, and it makes sense from a production standpoint anyway, because when they get into the more acrobatic stuff with mm-hmm. the armor, it's going to be CGI no matter what. It's just not practical to run that by wires.
Yeah, although in this series, I have to think that they seem to have been able to make the armors a lot more durable, because they do a lot of stuff in this series that I would not have expected them to.
Yeah.
Like in the motorcycle episode where Garo literally just gets thrown into a pile of boxes. I don't recall them ever doing stuff like that in the first series. They seem very careful with it in the first series.
They probably had money this time to make some extra suits.
Yeah.
At least stunt suits. I would almost imagine that for the original series, they just had the close-up Garo suit, and that was it.
Probably. Because, you know, when it wasn't CGI, a lot of times he would be very slow and meticulous.
He looked heavy when it wasn't CGI.
Yeah. In this series, it's Garo, Zero, Dan, and Baron are the only four we actually see with suits, right?
Is Baron Jiro?
Yeah, Baron is Jiro.
Okay.
Or Wataru in this series, which is also...
But I don't remember if we actually saw his suit before the CGI switchover.
Oh, yeah, we did in this introduction episode. Okay. He was constantly glowing with, like, evil energy and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure, because they like, had moments where they were grappling with – he was grappling with Dan or Garo, and he had a suit.
Okay. Apparently it only got used that one time.
Well, in the flashback episode that follows also, he transformed at the end of it.
Now, that flashback episode was pretty cool.
It was, and which is also something which
and it also had the death of children.
Yes, it did, being eaten by a giant whore.
Man.
And that was, like, the most random fucking thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it kind of works coming out of nowhere as it did.
Yeah. And, of course, by that point, you had realized that the kid in white was Koga anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Though that does raise a question.
Which is?
I'm trying to see if... one thing on here. Because it seemed like... eats the kids... because it seemed like they were almost trying to indicate
what
I'm not sure if it was supposed to be a red herring or not, because we do see him get eat. Well,
okay, you're kind of Fort Maxing on me here.
I'm sorry, I had to watch something. The kid in purple. I'm trying to figure out if that was supposed to be an allusion to Leo and Sigma, or if it was supposed to possibly have been one of them, which seems odd, but in the actual episode, you only see the kid kind of get knocked off screen. And given what happens during Sigma's death...
Well, that was the same kid, too, that was performing the magic tricks, wasn't it?
The one in purple was the one that had the... had the brush, so he was also, you know, using that during the training sequences to basically cheat.
Yeah, I remember that, because it seemed like at that point the episode was being directed more to show backstory of Sigma.
Yeah. So, but they
We knew anything about Sigma.
Yeah, they leave it kind of ambiguous. Is that, like, you can't tell if the kid in purple gets eaten or if he just gets, like, slammed to the side or something.
But when you take it with the rest of the series, what we found out afterward, it might have just been supposed to indicate a symptom of a growing problem of,
yeah,
you know, one side wanting to be involved in the other and not have the distinction between them anymore.
Yeah, and see, that's what I thought, like, right up until that one last moment where Koga and Sigma clash, and he cuts off the charm and all that. And because, like, if it's supposed to be...
But if it was, I would assume they would have done a little flashback to that.
Yeah. So, of course, obviously he would have probably been under the same training at that age, because Leo's father didn't choose Leo as the replacement until they were older, correct?
That's what I recall anyway, yeah.
So he would have gone through the same training anyway, so he would have probably recognized those things just from that anyway.
It's certainly possible. Although I think they probably intentionally left it vague as to the nature of that whole thing.
Yeah. Although, I mean, of course, at the end of the episode, he also sees those kids' spirits, so it can't be him. It's just the way that they leave it in that last episode, you have to kind of think about what they were trying to indicate.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of those things where it's supposed to be up to the viewer to decide exactly what it's going to mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I got the same ideas, too, with having the one kid doing the Makai priest tricks during the night training, but it never went anywhere concretely.
Yeah.
Especially if the kid did get eaten.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like you see him almost get kind of flattened and then the monster's mouth go down, but unlike with the smallest kid where you see him shoved into the thing's maw.
Yeah. Man, what a messed up show.
Isn't it, though?
Well, another of the manhole covers you mentioned earlier, which was kind of a clever plot device.
It was. And that was also an interesting, because at that point they were kind of having a parade of past tokusatsu actors and past and other tokusatsu writers, because that episode in particular was done by Kobayashi, who was doing Go Busters and did Kamen Rider O's. And, of course, it starred the guy who played Gino from Kamen Rider Double in a very different sort of role.
Yeah.
Apparently, OPD is down on hard times.
Well, with all the DuPont crime eliminated, you know.
Yeah. Good job, Shotaro. Look what you've done.
Well, Shotaro didn't get away scot-free either. Look what happened to the detective building.
Oh, God. Right. Bigness.
Hard times indeed.
Yeah, now he's living on the street with Santa Chan and Watcherman.
No, remember we talked about this before. Him and Philip are living in the apartment with Akiko and Terui.
Oh, right. Oh.
Terui's sitcom never, waiting to happen.
Terui's never going to get any. Ever again.
Well, it's Akiko. He probably wasn't anyway.
This is true.
But we were talking about Garo.
Right. It always seems to come back to Double, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Terry getting some. Or not, as the case may be.
The poker episode that was right around that was also really good, which was written by Inoue, of all people, and guest starring the guy who played Kaiza.
I bet it was rewritten heavily.
Yeah, there's a certain lack of bridges and falling in the rivers.
And suck.
It was, yeah, because that's actually one of my favorite episodes of the series. then, last week I went back and I was looking at who wrote what, and I was like, really?
Well, you have to remember, though, Inoue wrote Agito, and Agito was fantastic.
And the Jetman episode of Go Kaiser was excellent. So,
yeah. Okay, so what else stood out to you?
Overall, the series has a much more... as we said, solid story. And as well, one good thing I think they did was how they handled Kaoru, in that she is not, you know, damsel in distress 100% of the time.
Yeah.
In fact, saves Koga's ass, not once, but at least twice in the series at the very end, which is a nice turnaround to, at the end of the first series, it was Koga and Rei racing against time to save Kaoru from Kiba. While in this series, it is everybody that Koga has befriended racing against time to save him from Sigma.
Yeah, really, Kaoru in this series, the only times she was really in distress was when it was directly relevant to stuff she was doing anyway.
Or basically because she is up Koga's ass, so...
Well, yeah, but I mean, like...
They're going to target her.
Well, like, with her her agent or publisher or whatever, you know, I mean, that was just coincidence because she was working with that guy and, you know...
Yeah, although once the horror came around to Koga, it seemed to really focus more in on him, not just because he was a knight, but because of what was going on.
Yeah.
So there's probably some. So it's probably intentional that was how it ended up playing out anyway.
But you know, for the first few episodes, Kaoru and Koga weren't even on screen together.
Yeah, they keep missing each other.
Yeah, it's like, are they even filming this at the same time?
And I did like when they finally run into each other. Zaraba was just, "Are you just a whore magnet or something?" And then ironically, that's until that time with her publicist later on, I think that's the only time she directly runs into a horror.
Yeah.
So that's
kind of my point. Most of the time she's around, she's, you know, doing her own thing or hanging around at the house.
Yeah, and it's kind of like with the first 5 minutes of the first episode. It sort of sets up something that's similar to the first series and then completely does something different.
Right. And she finally got her book finished.
Finally! And of course, again, we don't see the last f***ing page.
Well,
and they did that, and they showed the first book, and again,
not the last page.
Show us the last f***ing page, and they set it up for like 2 minutes straight, going through the entire book, and then, that drove me crazy. At the end,
yes, but you know, they could never put anything on that last page that would satisfy you anyway. So
at this point, probably not, especially after how they tease it again in this series.
Well, okay, it was the end. Was it the end credits from the first series that always ended on the image of the knight going to the open door?
I want to think so, because the end of this series, every opening ended with another page of Kaoru's book.
Yeah. I mean, I have to assume it's kind of something like that, where it's more like that was a thematic representation, especially the way it worked at the end to get Koga out of Idea.
Oh, that does actually make sense. I hadn't thought about it that way.
You know, because they used it as the doorway to get him out.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it like that.
So maybe that is the last page of the book.
Yeah, and that would also correspond to that one of the few times when you actually see Koga crying, of all things.
Right. So I want to talk about Idea / Ganon's new body a little bit. Somebody actually thought to put rockets on the feet to make the huge thing able to walk. I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, that thing, I can only imagine how long that took, not just to design from a mechanical point of view, because they made sure that it would walk and move like a thing of that size.
Yeah.
But then to render it.
Right.
Because while it is something that is obviously CGI, especially when you have the guys bouncing around untransformed.
Right.
It's still very impressive somehow.
Although I kind of wonder if the full walking one is probably a smaller rig.
Something like I have to imagine they found ways to cut corners because Garo has always been pretty good at that.
Well, yeah, when your show is built around a suit of armor that takes up 90% of your budget.
Yeah, they learn how to cut corners, and I imagine that allowed them to use their budget nicely in this series.
Yeah, probably so.
Because it does look a lot nicer.
Oh, I'm sure they had more money this time anyway. Definitely.
Between the, you know, the money from merchandising of the first series, of Red Requiem, and, you know, all that combined, that probably left them with a nice bit of capital for this series compared to the first one.
Well, and if the movie was as well received as I figure it was to get the series then produced afterward, you know, investor confidence in it had to be pretty high anyway.
Yeah.
Where they will just give them the money to do what they need up to a point.
And a Japanese movie compared to ones here does not have to make nearly as much money.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, they wouldn't expect it to, since it's such a smaller population to ever potentially watch it.
But by their standards, obviously it did well enough to get the second series, so.
Yeah, and hopefully whatever they're going to do, what is it, October, that the next movie is going to be made?
I think thereabouts.
Or released.
Yeah.
It's being made right now. You know, hopefully that does well, too, and, you know, pushes the way toward a third series.
Yeah, and hopefully this time what they set up at the end of the series actually leads into the movie.
Yeah, because this is two times now that they're obviously screwing us over.
Yeah, but this time it seems a lot more deliberate how they were setting everything up in the last couple episodes with Demon Zordon and everything.
I thought you were talking about Garo, not GoBusters.
No, that's Cyber Demon Zordon. This is Hell Demon Zordon.
Yeah,
this one actually works with the good guys.
Yeah.
Although I can't help. Okay, so you know Koga made this deal with him to go to the Promised Land and recover a piece of his body. I can't help but think, given the way Garo usually rolls, that's going to end very poorly at some point.
I would have to assume that, I don't even remember its name, but this entity that they're working with is not really their friend, but it's something they're kind of having to ally themselves with for their own tactical sense.
Yeah, well, and it's, and you know, of course, you know, their own powers, like Garo's power is the power of a bunch of horrors bounded into a suit of armor, effectively.
Yeah.
So
it's all a real tenuous thing.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they would have an ally in that respect, even one that scares the freaking piss out of Zaruba.
Yeah, well, look at him.
Yeah.
I mean, when he says, go get a piece of my body, I think it literally is a piece of his body to add to the floating pile that he already is.
Yeah, and I imagine it really gives a feeling more so than just, oh, we're going to send Koga up north now, that they are trying to set up something larger.
Well, I mean, they're trying to set up a big situation for the movie to deal with, and I mean, that may be intended to wrap up this story anyway.
And if it does, that would be nice. I do hope this movie actually does include more people than just Koga.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I guess it just depends on the scope. If the movie is just about Koga going to this promised land to get a piece of the thing's body back,
and it'll probably be like Kiba Gaiden and be all, you know, Amamiya Demon World Vision.
So a lot of green screening.
Yeah, which, you know, would be entertaining.
And it doesn't cost very much.
No, you just have to have Koga's actor sitting there, you know, stick Hironobu Kageyama off to the side to yell out lines for Zaruba, and you're set.
Well, you have to admit, he does a pretty good job.
He does. It's something I never would have expected.
No, not at all. Well, and then isn't Ray's little charm somebody too?
Ooh, I'd have to check.
Damn it, Ken, you should know these things off the top of your head.
I don't remember. I honestly do not remember offhand.
I know the person who does the voice appeared in that special for the original series,
mm-hmm.
along with Hironobu, but I can't remember who it actually was.
Zaruba Silva. Silva is played by Ai Orikasa. She's
If that's somebody, I don't recognize the name off the top of my
head. She played Katra in Gundam Wing.
So she's Japanese bred swale?
I'm trying to find anybody more relevant. Somebody in Victory Gundam.
What's the character name?
I haven't seen Victory yet. It's Fuala Griffin?
No idea. I guess I haven't seen enough.
She's Ryoko in Tenchi Muyo.
Haven't seen the Japanese version of that.
Oh, that's a shame. Ryoko Katra. I never know how to pronounce his damn name. No, she's just done a lot of anime roles, really.
Fair enough.
Jakotsu and Inuyasha.
That was probably past the 50 or so episodes I actually watched.
Somebody in Beyblade. Moving on. Please.
So anyway. Okay, so before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to cover on this?
That's a good question. Let's see. We covered most of the basics. Well, we mentioned it briefly, but there is the heavy homage in the character of Baron / Wataru to Kamen Rider Kiva.
Oh, you mean how his armor is a blue wolf theme?
And that his name is Wataru.
Yeah. Well, you know, that by itself would just be a coincidence.
Yeah, but everything combined,
yeah,
it's just a funny thing. It's like, of all the things you're going to homage, Kamen Rider Kiva, you have to think, it's like, okay, we got this actor. What can we do with this?
Well, it was either that or Hibiki.
I think they went the right way.
Oh, yeah, I would say.
And Wataru was an interesting character. I really wish they had done a bit more with him. Because, I mean, speaking of Makai Knight, they didn't do much with. We haven't even mentioned the fact that Dan was actually in the series.
And I'm okay with that.
And doing about as much as he did in Midnight Sun.
You know, I remember watching the special that went along with Midnight Sun, the making of special.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the actor was really enthusiastic about getting involved with the show.
Yeah. And it's not like he does a bad job. It's just...
Well,
not terrible. I guess he's not as... He's not really as up to it. Well, okay, I guess he's not the best. Thinking about it.
Well, I mean, if you look at his face time in his appearances in Makai Senki, it's a little bit stiff.
Yeah, he has less expressions than Koga, which is saying something, I think.
Well, and with Koga, there's expressiveness in not having expressions.
There is. Because, I mean, he's good for what the character needs to be.
With Dan, it's more like he'd really like to have expressions but can't figure out how.
Yeah.
And that really shows when they superimposed his face over his knight form, whose name I can't remember because he is born
his knight form is Dan. His name is Tsubasa.
Oh, whatever. See, like I said, boring as f- I cannot remember the details.
Yeah, okay, so maybe they made the right decision there.
But, you know, when they superimposed his face and he was doing the battle scream, it was just very empty.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't feel like he was in the moment, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay, we've seen enough of you this series. Thank you. Yeah. You can go home now.
Not been much at all, so.
Yeah.
It's like they gave the better screen time to Wataru anyway.
You know, the only thing that really worked with him in Midnight Sun was the parts where he was being a dick.
To his sister. And to Jabby.
And everybody else.
Everybody else. But particularly his sister and Jabby.
But that's what I'm saying. The parts where he was being a dick, that worked fine.
It seemed to come very natural to him.
I could believe that that portrayal. I could believe that.
Yeah.
The part where he's trying to be heroic, no, that just doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah. Well, I guess one other last topic would be the main villain and the final episode.
Yeah, we haven't really gone into the details on Sigma, have we?
Yeah, him being the evil older brother, whom I...
The evil older twin brother,
whom I legitimately, honestly, really thought was Leo.
For that first 5 minutes.
Oh, for an episode, until, you know, Leo came out of thin air and bitch smacked his brother upside the head.
As a knight.
Of all things.
And see, to me, that's the part where it's like, oh, hey, fanfic.
It is a little bit, but...
Because, you know, you get the evil twin brother out of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, you get the guy who appears to be this other hero guy who's really been evil the whole time. But no, hey, it's just his evil twin brother and the guy before. He's a knight. But he's been pretending to be a priest all this time.
Yeah, although, I mean, they did, when you look back at it retroactively, they did lampshade it pretty well. Especially in that episode that just focuses solely on Leo and Kaoru.
Mm-hmm.
And it does work better than I would have thought it would on paper.
Yeah, I guess so. But it seems like after Sigma was unmasked, while, I mean, there was importance to Leo's presence, but it wasn't like it was before. He was kind of there to be the younger brother to the bad guy, instead of just being Koga's priest sidekick.
Yeah.
Which in itself is not a bad role, the sidekick deal.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, that was better than being defined by the villain.
Also true. But, you know, hopefully Leo's character will be like most of the other characters, and if he sticks around, maybe he'll get a bit more and actually stand out. That's just more than the villain's little brother, effectively.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's possible. I mean, Rekka came back after just appearing in the movie.
Yeah, and I think with what Rekka had in this series, it did, because, you know, throughout the entire movie, she's basically just a raging bitch. Mm-hmm. And only towards the very end does she actually start not being as much. And seeing her expanded a little bit more here does help make her character not come across as quite as abrasive overall.
Well, and it basically goes back to what we started out with, which is that Mekhi Senki's just expanding on everything that's already been established.
Except for Dan.
Who? No, it's fleshing out everything that it can, mm-hmm. and so, you know, Rekka gets to be more of a balanced person, and, you know, Ray gets to have his own adventures, you know, yep. I mean, that when you get down to it, that's what Mekhi Senki was all about, and it just put in that whole Brand of Oblivion thing just to, you know, try to tie the whole thing together and give them something to work with at the end.
Yeah, and, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. The final battle itself is about the only thing in the series that I was a little bit disappointed in.
Not the final battle.
I should say where they destroyed Ganon.
Yeah.
Because you're used to, at that point, every time Garo gets some random out of left field suit upgrade, and usually involving wings.
Although, to look at it from the production standpoint, Garo's upgrade this time was an army of knights.
This is true.
You know, so they put the CG time into that instead of giving him, I don't even know what at this point, but
I just wanted to see what kind of crazy shit they would come up with this time.
You know, the thing I was expecting going up to the last part of that fight was he would take on power from all the other knights,
mm-hmm.
to advance to a final form. Which, at that point, I was thinking, okay, it's Ronin Warriors and it's the Inferno Armor again.
But, of course, on the other hand, this way doesn't marginalize the rest of the knights either. Because
exactly.
Everybody
gets it. It's a much better way to handle the blockbuster fight at the end by bringing in the entire order and involving as many Mekhi priests as possible on the outside.
Rather than just having Optimus Prime's hijack somebody's corpse and then, you know, rip off somebody's face.
Which, while I'm not disqualifying that as a valid approach either, you know, it has given us one of the best catchphrases of all time.
This is very true.
And if Gaara wants to go all give me your face on somebody, I'm behind that as long as it's not me.
However, that did kind of pale in comparison to the actual final fight of the episode.
Well, and that's when the Ganon fight ended 5 minutes into the last episode, I wasn't sure whether we were going to have a follow-up with Sigma or if it was just going to be wrapping up all of the other story elements and, you know, going off on the next mission that had been set up already.
Yeah, and that would have worked, but...
Yeah, it would not have been a surprise at all for the rest of the episode to just be, okay, life's going on.
Yeah, but, and of course then, you know, he shows up for dinner.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never really would have expected them to just rip his house out of the ground and destroy it utterly in the air. Of course, it had to be in the air because it is Amamiya, but...
Well, and, okay, here's the interesting thing with that, too. In a couple of the spots, especially where it's lifting out of the ground, it's not CGI, it's a miniature.
Yeah, I noticed that, too.
And I mean, so that put a smile on my face.
Yeah, and that's where the budget went. The budget went to that instead of giving Rodo a costume, which I think is better spent.
Yeah, I would say so. Because, I mean, even though the miniatures you know, there's an obvious sense of, like, the gravity scale that you're not getting out of it. But at the same time, it looks real. You can't ever get that with CGI, no matter how good it is.
No.
And this show still does not have CGI that good.
Not quite, even though it's a lot better. But it does also have, you know, of course, gravity. It does have a lot of gravity for the character, too, because, you know, this was his childhood home, and it's suddenly just getting torn apart at the freaking seams.
The thing I was thinking at the end is, oh, hey, where's Gonza going to live now?
He's going to have... oh, poor Gonza.
Because that was his home, too.
He's going to have to go live in Cower's apartment.
I smell another sitcom.
He can be... No, Cower's apartment is just right across from Akiko and Terui's. Oh, that would be fantastic, actually.
Well, and on that note, I think that'll conclude our wrap-up on Garo Mekai Senki.
More or less.
It was a good 24 episodes. I'm really happy that they got another run at the series.
Yeah. It was very, very solid, especially compared to, you know, how a lot of sequel series can end up being for a lot of shows.
And the amazing thing is how little any of the cast appeared to age in those, you know, intervening 5 years.
Yeah, I think the one who seemed like she aged the most was probably Kaoru, and that's just, you know, less looking like a kid. Even though she still looks like a kid because she's shorter than everybody else in the damn show.
Well.
Especially Leo.
Yeah, well, Leo seemed to just be kind of tall anyway.
Yeah, in general. And then they magnified that with Rodo, where Rodo is like, you know, 8 feet tall somehow.
Well, that's the magic of CGI. And probably, you know, platform shoes.
The true
if I have a suit of magic armor, I definitely want platform shoes.
Really?
Hey, why not? It's a magic suit of armor.
I guess this is true.
It can do that.
Yeah, it does appear from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You just gotta, you know, bind a couple extra demons to to your feet, and you're good.
Fire!
Welcome back to Paladin's Place, preferred provider of mechanized melee.
It's time for Buster!
The 36th Super Sentai series is well underway, and so far the initial response to Takume Sentai Go Busters has been very positive. The premiere episode alone features some excellent action scenes and effects work unlike anything Sentai has seen in recent years. And naturally, with a new series comes new merchandising. Today I'm covering the first release in the GoBusters DX Mecha line. Interestingly, instead of releasing Zords in a single box set this year, GoBuster machines will apparently be individually released. This may lead to some interesting configurations in the future, but it also makes the pre-order system even more difficult for collectors. Nevertheless, this is Buster Machine CB-01, Red Buster's personal Zord. O-1's primary form is a massive supercar that launches off a building ramp to reach fights in time. The design is a fairly standard vehicle. It would probably fit right in with larger-scale Transformers. The GoBusters are supported outside of combat by the Buddyroids, mechanical animal creatures whose origins have not been fully explained at the time of this writing. GoBuster Red's partner is one Cheetah Nick, a cheetah-inspired robot who can transform into a motorcycle. This is the smallest piece of the first Zord set, and looking at its so-called transformation, which is basically just folding the legs upward, I begin to suspect the design team picked up a spare Ranger key and then stuck it on a leftover Ghostsaker header. Nevertheless, again, Nick combines with CB-01 to unlock the vehicle's full potential, which at this stage basically means the car sprouts an animal head. By itself, it's a silly-looking add-on, but it does enable further transformations. CB-01 can then convert to Beast Mode, a massive cheetah-shaped robot block. It's almost totally immobile, but I'm still very impressed at the creativity of the design. We've had vehicles with animalistic qualities before this, but never animals that turn into vehicles in this form. And of course, CB-01 has one final transformation, converting to the one-man Megazord GoBuster Ace. So consider this from a Transformers perspective. This single Megazord is a triple changer, breast animal, and eventually a combiner. Ace's giant legs prevent any lower body articulation, but he does have some startlingly good movement in his upper shoulders and even some elbow movement, which Megazords almost never have. As expected, GoBuster Ace does come with the traditional sword weapon, except the sword is attached to Ace's right hand on a ball joint instead of a peg. This way, the sword is integral throughout the various transformations without having to be removed. It's another impressive add-on feature, but I have already noticed some faint stress marks around the ball socket, so I'll have to keep a close watch on using this weapon. The engineering of GoBuster Ace is simply remarkable. For a long time now, Super Sentai has needed something a bit beyond the usual stick-five-things-together setup for Megazords, and Ace pulls it off with superb detail. Definitely a fun and promising start to this new series. Highly recommended. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more Superhero Time.
All right, well, Paladin, thanks for that review. That was, well, you know, you recorded it. So, next week, we're going to do two episodes of Decade, because why the hell not? And we've decided to do the World of Ryuki story arc, because it's f***ing nuts.
Yes, it is.
But in the best possible way-ish. Well, it is still Decade. I mean, what can you do?
Oh. His own original writer for that world.
Boy, you sound terrible again.
Well, I always sound terrible, though.
No, I mean, like,
more terrible.
Bad.
Wow, you guys are kind of breaking up, too, actually.
That's nice.
Somebody's tipping the cow again.
Yep.
Hey, at least it hasn't toppled
well,
over
we're almost
yet.
Done.
Yeah, you know, we managed to make it through an entire show this week with me hosting the call and nothing went wrong. Or
Twat?
At least not fatally wrong.
On two separate days, no less.
Shh.
No,
nobody knows
I would
that.
Say something went wrong.
Yeah, we did the show, I know. Ha ha. Obvious jokes are obvious, Fort Max. Just like your mom. Okay, so, anything else before we go this week? That's what I thought. All right, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
So long.
You've been listening to Superhero Time. Follow us on Twitter at Superhero_Time for weekly power playback and updates about the show. Visit tfradio.net or find us on iTunes for previous episodes and to subscribe to the show. Superhero Time is a TF Radio Network production. Copyright 2012.
Okay, cool. Well, no, I like that. I mean, you know, it's 8:30 or 9:30 to you East time zone people. You people with your crazy hour fast time.
Yeah, f*** this time. I remember, like, you said, oh, about 8 o'clock Saturday. I was like, okay, sure. Had my stuff set up 8 o'clock. Wait, he made Central.
Oops. Well, it's okay. You didn't have to open the next day.
Yeah, this is true.
Plus, it wouldn't have mattered. You sat up half the night watching Toonami anyway.
Yeah, I did. And I was going to go to
bed actually
early
ended up
too.
Sitting and watching the entire thing.
I couldn't. I tried staying up through Trigun, and it was a really good episode too. Mm-hmm. Like it's where the series basically ends for me. Also, so
well, it's weird. It was the last episode.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was the episode where Wolfwood dies. But for me, it might as well be because I can't stand the show after that.
Well,
last,
yeah, I mean,
like I said, it's the last episode.
Oh, okay, you have the same opinion then, cool.
Well, you know, the anime had to be crazy like that at the end because the manga was still ongoing.
Yeah.
So they had to create an original ending, which sucked.
But that does not excuse, you know, awful writing.
No, I'm not trying to excuse it at all, I'm just saying, you know, they were kind of stuck having to pull something out of their ass for that.
Yeah, it's like the second half of Full Metal Alchemist.
Wasn't
or Hideki?
Hey, well, that's entirely different situation.
Wasn't Wolfwood an original character for the anime anyway?
Wolfwood's in the manga, I think. I think he actually does. I'm not sure on this, but I think he does end up dying eventually in the manga too, just at a different place and in a different way.
Oh,
I think I might be wrong.
But yeah, it was a good episode. I mean, it's kind of the one that I would expect them to pick.
And I guess what rounded it out? Astro Boy?
Astro Boy, then Gigantor.
Oh.
And that was the end.
I miss Gigantor.
Eh.
Oh, I know it's terrible nowadays, but still. Gigantor.
They showed the first episode of Astro Boy. It was very...
60s?
Creepy.
Oh!
So 60s.
Yeah.
And Japanese.
The whole hell of a combination there, really.
Yeah, really.
Tezuka.
But no, one thing the Toonami thing caused for me is wanting to go back and watch more of Gundam Wing.
Yeah, I have the first half of the series lying around here somewhere. I never bought the second half. I really want to go buy the second half now and just watch it through.
Well, didn't you say you ended up buying Outlaw Star?
I almost did. Then I looked at my bank account.
Oh, well. Okay, so do it after next paycheck.
Yeah, I was like, I gotta wait for my next paycheck because I just paid my car payment.
But as long as you do get it.
Yes.
It's one of those things that's worth having around.
It's like Outlaw Star. I got the last volume of it back when it first came out on DVD because that was the one that had the missing episode that we never got to see.
Yeah.
On TV.
Hot Spring Planet Henry.
Which I ended up realizing, oh wait, that was important.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's where those random caster shells came from.
And the knowledge that they drain your life force.
Yeah.
Because that did get explained there, too.
Though he does exposition that a bit.
Well, he does, but it kind of comes out of left field how he even realizes that.
Yeah. It's like, that never happened earlier in this series. What is he talking about?
Well, yeah, and he's never really understood the technology or whatever to the caster. It's just...
He used them.
His special gun. It's a special gun. There is no other like it except for that stick thing that McDougal has.
Yeah.
That sure amounted to all of nothing, too.
Yeah.
Just like this show.
Kind of like the McDougals in general, actually, because it's like, set up this thing at the very end of the series, and there's not going to be anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
Sad trombone.
Yeah.
Hey, it could be worse, though. It could have gotten a continuation like Big O.
Big O 2 is decent up until the last few episodes.
The problem isn't that Big O got a continuation. It's that it didn't get
the third season
because Cartoon Network is dicks.
Well, that and nobody had thought to put any kind of leash on Kanaka when he was writing it.
Well, that kind of shows.
Well, they
it?
Had been. Yeah. Well, part of that was that they had been led to believe that there was going to be a third season.
That doesn't surprise me.
Which I don't even know where they could have gone with a third season at that point. Anyway, you know,
I could think anything
to continue after that would just be, you know, going with the magic.
Roger Smith
button.
Would learn how to hold those tomatoes.
I could see a few ways they could have done it.
Unfortunate euphemism.
With Megas, they had like half of the third season written when they found out that
don't remind me of that.
I was a bit sad they didn't show Megas at all.
Fucking Cartoon Network.
That would
have here's the thing. One, they own Megas. Two, they don't have any DVDs of Megas.
And see, that's another problem they should rectify.
Yes. But it's Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Kind
of like that third season of Animated. Yeah.
Or Symbionic Titan.
It's funny how it reminds everybody, like, oh, I love Toonami. Oh, I hate Cartoon Network.
Yeah, what was it I said on Twitter while that was going on?
Everybody said a lot on Twitter.
I know, I'm trying to see if I can find that particular...
Like, trending worldwide. It's like, what? Seriously?
That was kind of awesome, though, that did happen like
It's like, yeah, Yu Yu Hakusho is second trending worldwide. What? Seriously?
Yeah, really.
And then that batshit's insane third Tenchi Muyo OVA. Now I remember why I didn't...
How is that any different from regular Tenchi Muyo?
The third OVA is not good.
It's even worse.
Third OVA is not good at all.
I repeat, how is that different?
I like Tenchi Universe.
It's bad even by Tenchi standards.
Even the Tenchi fans kind of disown the third OVA.
Kind of like they disowned the third movie.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pitching Universe and its first movie are good, I think. But that's about
And actually, the third OVA never got aired.
Right.
Here.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of the thing that threw everybody off guard. They're like, oh, Tenchi's coming on. Oh, wait, what? Like, oh, awesome, the third OVA. And then everybody kind of slowly comes down like, oh, God, this is terrible.
Regular reaction to Tenchi Muyo.
And what made it even worse is that Funimation was not able to get back half of the voice cast. So the replacements...
They sure were replacements.
There's some replacements, all right.
That kind of happens in GXP, too, but it's okay because the original cast one and a half episodes, I think.
One and a half episodes. Is GXP any good?
I liked it.
Oh, okay. I've always been meaning to check it out. I kept forgetting about it.
I ran into it accidentally before it got licensed.
Oh. How do you run into it before it got licensed?
What?
How do you accidentally run into it before it got licensed?
I don't even remember. I just know I wasn't looking for it at the time. But I ended up watching the first 12 episodes that were subtitled. Then the group that was doing it disappeared, as would happen. And
yeah. Probably because that's when it got licensed.
Long story short, 7 years later, I bought the DVD set and finally got to finish the series. I think it only cost about $20.
Yeah, probably nowadays.
No, I mean when I got it.
Oh. I was about to say,
that's been a while ago.
It's usually pretty good at knocking down the prices pretty quickly after releases.
Yeah, I guess so.
All that Dragon Ball Z money.
Of course, I also made the mistake of buying the first Full Metal Alchemist movie on DVD.
Ooh, you poor bastard.
Yeah, damn me.
Well, that just kind of goes hand in hand with the end of the second half of the first anime in general, which just goes batshit insane off the tracks.
Because, again, they were outpacing the manga.
Yes. Now, Brotherhood is very good.
Now, actually, the series that's handled the filler stuff the best would actually probably have to be One Piece.
Of course, that would require people to watch One Piece, which I know people do, but
I
not
don't
smart
either.
People.
But the way they handled it was good.
From what I've heard,
they got the manga art. The guy who writes the manga wrote filler.
Well, you know,
and then 4Kid got a hold of it.
You know, he's done some filler. I don't think he's done all, but like Oda did the last movie. I know also.
No, you know who did filler really well? Dragon Ball Z with that episode where Goku and Piccolo learn how to drive.
Yeah, but that's the only filler that did well, really.
Well, it's the only filler that matters.
All of DBZ's other filler is
screaming.
All of DBZ's other filler is just.
Yeah. Well, that's
you've all heard the 4Kids intro to One Piece, right?
Yes, I have. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Why even bring that up?
Why?
Because I like to share suffering.
But yeah, from what I've heard from One Piece
fans... Paladin sure is dicks.
From what I've heard from One Piece fans, the filler in the anime is a lot better than, you know, say, Bleach or Naruto. Then again, it's hard to be worse than Naruto's filler.
It's hard to be worse than Bleach.
Just
or
in general.
Naruto.
It seems to me like Bleach is just a bad copy of Yu Yu Hakusho's original concept.
Actually, I have no idea if this is right or not, but I think I remember that I think one of the filler things of filler was just cut in the middle of one of the manga stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they did that a couple of times, actually. But Bleach started off really interesting. Like, the first few volumes of the manga are really pretty good, but then it gets to the Soul Society, and it just, no.
So it sounds like it is exactly like Yu Yu Hakusho.
Well, except Yu Yu Hakusho, I can't stand the manga, but I love the anime all the way through.
No, but like the first story arc or two are fairly interesting to watch, and then it becomes, you know, typical tournament fighting anime.
The difference between like Yu Yu Hakusho and DBZ in that, though, is that it's much more condensed. And I like shonen stuff when it's condensed like that, when it's not, you know... 10 episodes of the same fight, but a couple episodes.
Yeah, but you have to remember that Yu Yu Hakusho is only about half the length of Dragon Ball Z.
It's less than that, I think.
Well, I know it's less than half of all of Dragon Ball.
No,
but...
DBZ is like nearly 300 episodes. Yu Yu Hakusho is 112.
I thought DBZ was only about 250.
No, it's like 290 something.
Really?
Is that included?
Because and 90 episodes of that is the Buu Saga.
The Buu stuff is 90 episodes?
Yes. Well, that's including the
Saiyan. That's frightening, isn't it?
Mother
that's
of f***.
Yeah, that's including the Saiyan Man stuff and all the pointless episodes towards the end. But it's basically 90 episodes from the time skip forward.
No wonder Jeez. Kai didn't touch that shit.
No shit. Well, that and the Buu Saga is just generally terrible. Anyway, we're going to spend all this time pumping up Gohan, powering him up, only for having to get his ass kicked and eaten by Buu. And then, you know, let's bring Goku back for the end.
I'm sure Toriyama was just as happy with that as you are.
Yeah, I know. From everything I've heard, he was.
Toriyama got paid, but it's not what he wanted for the development of his universe.
Because
basically, wasn't he wanting to end it after the Frieza stuff?
He wanted to end it after Frieza, and then he wanted to end it after Cell. And then after that, he wanted Gohan to be the hero. But Shonen Jump would not let Gohan be the hero.
Or let it end after Frieza, or let it end after Cell.
Right. Yes.
And then came GT.
Which Toriyama wasn't even involved with.
And really, the Cell Saga, if you're just going to talk about overall, is really the best ending, I think, out of all of those for just Dragon Ball in general. If you just ended it there, it would be good.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fine, and that's what Kai did.
Yeah, and because, you know, it's a really good thing, because, you know, that finally passes the torch completely to Gohan. He blows the f*** out of Cell and changes Earth's rotation probably in the process.
Well, they're doomed anyway. They blew up the f***ing moon.
A couple times, actually.
Yeah.
Because both Roshi and Piccolo have done that at separate instances.
Well, that's because it got wished back once.
I think you just have to assume it was wished back, because I don't think any... Yeah,
well, the moon died, so...
I guess Toriyama's stated intention for that was that off-screen, Kami made a deal with Goku to permanently remove his tail, or mostly permanently remove his tail, and put the moon back.
Yeah,
I think they said that towards the very end of the original Dragon Ball, too.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've watched it, I can't remember, and that would require me to remember, like, specific instances from the original Dragon
Ball. And then, ironically, Piccolo comes around and just blows the f*** out of it again.
Well, he's Piccolo, I mean.
Yeah.
Now, original Dragon Ball needs the Kai treatment, too.
It could use it, but not as much as Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, it can use a little trimming here and there, but it's not as bad.
I mean, at least the stuff that happens in between major events is kind of interesting in Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I mean, Dragon Ball as a whole, I mean, it's, what, 150 episodes? But it's fun to watch through.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind that as
much.
Yeah,
and stuff happens. The fighting isn't just people blasting stuff at each other.
And grunting.
And then grunting, and then blasting stuff again.
It was, you know, fights.
Well, that's why I like Kai so much more, because it is just what I'm talking about, the condensed shonen stuff. It is just the fights.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Of course, you know, a bridge trumps all of it.
Oh, of course. A bridge is the best version of all. That goes without saying. See, the thing about a bridge I like so much is that it still, like, maintains the story and the fight somehow, even in spite of everything else.
Right. Well, it just proves that the editors are really good at what they do.
Yeah.
Those people need to be doing this professionally. Except well, for like, the part where it would take them away from doing more Dragon Ball Abridged.
Yeah, well, it's like if, you know, Chris Sabat ever retires from Funimation, they could just hire Lanny Poitier and there'd be nobody even notice the difference.
Yeah, probably not.
He could also fill in whoever does Frieza's old voice in Genkai.
Nice.
Which is frightening, but...
How did we even get onto this?
I don't know.
Toonami.
Segue again.
Yes. Toonami.
Super Hero Time! 次回もお楽しみに!
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.